Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
A longtime lecturer says he was passed over for a teaching position at UNB because of his race and color. Timothy Christie is African-Canadian. He filed a formal complaint with the New Brunswick Human Rights Commission after he didn't get an interview for a term teaching position in St. John. It's a job he claims he previously held. Christie has a Ph.D. in philosophy and a master's in health sciences and is currently the regional director responsible for ethics services for Horizon Health. He is also an adjunct professor at Dalhousie Medical School and a former St. John Police Commissioner. He spoke to the CBC's Connell Smith.
So a couple of years ago in 2016, they had the same job that I'm talking about now was posted. And it was, once again, a four-month contract. It wasn't an eight-month contract. And I applied for that position, and I got it. Getting it was very difficult. So the interview committee spent a lot of time asking me how would I be able to do my responsibilities working in the hospital sector with a full-time teaching load. And I explained to them, you know, that the full-time teaching load is not difficult. It's something I do anyway. I almost carry a full-time teaching load with my hospital, university jobs, and medical school jobs, and all of that anyway. So I said, you know, that is very possible to work it out. So we had a long interview, and I answered the questions to their satisfaction. The thing is, the interview committee had no idea that the university had an employment equity policy. And the employment equity policy said that if a person from a designated group makes it to an interview, they get a hiring preference to increase diversity in the university. This committee had no idea. The chairman of the committee had no idea that this policy existed. So I asked them about this policy in the interview, and that's why I know for sure they didn't know that it existed. So consistent with the policy, they were more or less, they put my name forward as the recommended candidate. So then the dean tried to stop my appointment. So Jonah Everett is the Dean of Arts at UNB, and she unilaterally said that I'm not able to work at the hospital and teach at the university. So this was an attempt at circumventing the hiring preference. So the policy said I get a preference, but the dean said no. So we went through a long legal process. I got a lawyer, legal advice. I had letters back and forth to the university, going all the way to the vice president of UNBSJ, who was Robert McKinnon, and eventually we worked it out. So reluctantly, I got that appointment for the four-month contract. So this one that happened, they just didn't interview me. So I won the job before. I competed successfully against everybody who applied. I was the person that they recommended. And for this job, to circumvent those policies from the university, the hiring committee simply didn't put me on the short list to be interviewed.
So your feeling is that they used that technicality to just by keeping you from the interview. That's what that was about.
And that's what racism is that in this day and age, racism isn't where people say blatant things. is where they use existing structures, existing systems, existing policies to achieve their racist end. And in this circumstance, that hiring committee knew if I was interviewed that this policy would come into place, so they simply didn't interview me. And when that hiring committee, or I think the technical term is an assessment committee, and when the assessment committee goes through resumes to decide who they're going to hire, the university policies say that they should have the top three people, the three most eligible people, at least a minimum of three that they interview. But there's no accountability there. There's no confirmation that what they've been interviewed is in fact the top three most qualified. It is the three that the committee wants to hire or interview. So in this circumstance, although I was amongst the most qualified applicants, I simply wasn't interviewed.
So, to take this step to file a complaint, to talk to us, you must feel it's hopeless.
So I've been doing this for a long time. I've been trying to work with these people for a long time. This human rights complaint. So I'm accusing the university of violating my human rights because of racial discrimination. That's not something I did easily or lightly. I've worked with these people for years. So the people I've worked with are the ones I'm accusing of racism. I filed the complaint last year in October, and we're going to mediation at the end of March. In the meantime, however, the university is still hiring people. They're still posting jobs. They're still doing all of the things that allowed people to behave in this racist way in the first place.
From a person, just a typical person looking at the University of New Brunswick, they would see a lot of minorities working there. Okay. How do you reconcile that with this particular case if there's a structural issue?
Well, this is one of the insidious things about racism, is that it's irrational. So to say in terms of racism that we expect consistent racist behavior makes no sense. It's fundamentally irrational in the first place. So they can be as inconsistently racist as they want to be. So the fact that there are lots of people working there, I think, is a wonderful thing. People from designated groups is a wonderful thing, and the university has done a really good job of that. But in the circumstances I'm talking about, I'm the victim of racial discrimination, regardless of how many other people are working there, regardless of who was on the assessment committee. They discriminated against me because of my race and color. So I don't have to prove that they've been consistently racist in every walk of their being, because they haven't at all. But in this particular case, it was racist. And that's what I have to prove. But it's very tempting to say, well, the principle of consistency, because we like to use that in our lives, shows they're not racist here, they're not racist here, they're not racist here. That does not mean in any sense of the imagination they were not racist in my circumstance.
Will you be able to, if this gets worked out through mediation, through the Human Rights Commission, can you go back to UNB and work within that organization comfortably?
Oh, I'm doing it now. So I'm teaching on a part-time basis right now. I'm actively teaching a course right now. And, the only difference right now is that I'm calling them on their behavior. So they've been racist for the last 10 years. And I've worked there for 10 years. So it doesn't bother me one bit that I'm calling them on it right now. I'm telling them I know what's happened, and that doesn't make me uncomfortable. If it makes them uncomfortable, maybe they want to change their behavior or modify their attitudes. But I have nothing to be uncomfortable about. And if the university would like to retaliate against me because of this, then I'll take that challenge as well.
Timothy Christie has filed a human rights complaint against the University of New Brunswick. He wants to see the university review its hiring process from beginning to end. He was speaking to the CBC's Connell Smith. CBC reached out to the university and to the people named in the human rights complaint. We were referred to UNB spokesperson David Stonehouse, Stenhouse says this is a personnel issue and the university cannot comment on it. In 1988, UNB signed a certificate committing itself to employment equity. The collective agreement governing contract employees at UNB also includes a section on employment equity that commits both the union and the university to equal opportunity.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. So I have been told this is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If you have figured out some things that work well on the job, they get racists, whites up off of you. You get all your promotions. You get all your raises. If you need to take vacation days, if you need sick time, if you need to take a half day, if you need to transfer, whatever you need, you get it. No questions asked. No problems. You don't get accused of being aloof, of not talking enough. You get the nice, huge office. You go in, you do your job, things are great, and you're going to be hanging out until you are ready to retire, whenever that is, according to your own choosing. If you are in that position, you should be the first person to dial in 641-715-3640, decode 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate, especially if you are in that grand position, because we would like detailed, explicit notes on how you did it, what we need to do so we can get in that same position. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Certainly if you have problems, if you know something has come up on the job and you would like codified counter-racist suggestions on, you know, possible ways that you can proceed to try to remedy things, solving problems without creating new problems, feel free, dial in, and we will share a thought. If you are not able to dial by phone, you can email us, or you can email me, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your commentary on the air and get, you know, feedback, suggestions from listeners as we proceed for the evening. So feel free to drop an email if you're not able to participate live. I will say about the segment, the audio segment that we just heard with Timothy Christie, a victim of racism, according to his own testimony, in the area of the world known as Canada, global problem of racism, white supremacy. He knew the policy before he was hired for the job that he was applying for. I've talked about that on this program before, and I got that from that Forbes article. I said they do, I think, have articles that have constructive information about workplace racism. They have columns specifically that are about, well, not workplace racism. Let me make sure I speak correctly. It's just about workplace in general, workplace problems, and then they offer suggestions about, you know, the best way to try to do things in the workplace. Anyway. But they recommended know the policy before you even accept a job. Know their policy and procedure. And he knew, Mr. Christie, knew their policy about if a non-white person gets to the interview process, that's supposed to be, you know, extra credit for them towards being hired. He knew that. And ask the question. We talked about that as well. Good questions to ask during the interview process. That is a phenomenal question to ask. Are you aware of this particular aspect of the policy, which says that I am supposed to get, you know, bonus credit because of my racial status? Were you all aware of that? Beautiful. Beautiful just by knowing the policy and procedure. We talk about that all the time on the program, and that is a great illustration of why you should know it in advance of getting the job, maybe even before you interview for the job. Know the policy and procedure. Brilliant. A couple quick things that I wanted to get to before we get to callers. The first thing, there was an article in the LA Times earlier this week. I'm slowly kind of trying to get back into the groove of things and reading the newspaper on a regular basis, aspiring to be like Dick Gregory, Dr. Welsing, read, you know, 3, 4, 5, 12, 20 newspapers per day. So the LA Times, a couple days ago, they had a report, LA Fire Chief raises concerns about divisive, they have that word in quotes, work incidents involving firefighters. All this drama and conflict and strife at the fire department. Continuing, the Los Angeles Fire Department has experienced a series of divisive, they got it in quotes again, workplace incidents in recent months, including at least one debate between firefighters over protests by NFL players, according to a letter to the agency's employees. In a two-page letter posted Friday, Fire Chief Ralph M. Terrazas said his agency has experienced on-duty heated discussions regarding the perception of a lack of patriotism by NFL players, end quote, who have kneeled during the national anthem. In a separate incident, firefighters from different ethnic backgrounds had a near physical altercation, in quotes, after someone showed up late to work, Terrazas wrote. In yet another, the department received complaints about a perceived lack of sensitivity, in quotes, toward non-white firefighters during an investigation, and the Times journalist used the term non-white. These types of issues and incidents are divisive and can erode our ability to accomplish our collective mission to protect the lives and property of the people of Los Angeles, the chief said in his letter. I'll read one more. He says, Terrazas wrote that he expects every firefighter to behave in a way that fosters a professional and respectful workplace free of discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and hazing, end quote. He also reminded the department's nearly 3,600 employees that they must use the title firefighter, not fireman. Words are important. I'll stop there. The article goes on to give more detail. It stood out for a lot of different reasons. There's just been so many reports, even just within the last year, much less the last, you know, 50 years, 100 years, with regards to white supremacy, racism, and fire departments across this area of the world, the United States. We talked about many. They had the incident down in Florida where a whole lot of people just got fired. I think that was right at the end of 2017. But with this incident, I thought a couple of things. Number one, non-white, since that was the term used in the report, non-white people, I think one thing, keeping control of our emotions. I think we talked about this before. I think Emmy codified this real short. I don't discuss politics on the job. I don't care what you think about Colin Kaepernick or anybody else who is taking a knee or doesn't want to do the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem. I don't talk about politics. So codified non-white people anywhere in the known universe would never get into a heated exchange on the job about anything related to politics, football, any of that. If anything, I will break out my pen and pad or recorder or what have you, or just get my attentive posture and listen. Maybe I ask a question. Perhaps I just listen and take note of what was said. Give them, That would be the maximum. It's not going to be any bad. What are you, Colin Kaepernick is cool. And what, come on. They said, and it got near a physical altar. Come on. And the reason is because, generally speaking, my observation as a student of counter-racism science, still learning, My observation, when it gets to a point where a non-white person is emotional, having some sort of argument, where you're going back and forth with a white person, where it gets to the point where someone thinks that this could become a physical altercation, generally, it's been my perspective, that does not work out well for the non-white person. Generally speaking, most of the time, I do not see where that non-white person ends up being promoted and becomes the CEO of the company and gets the best parking space of any employee. I have never seen where that happens. I've seen a whole lot of times where that person gets fired or some sort of reprimand or warning or, you know, I've seen that pretty common. Very common, that sort of thing, but not, yes, this worked out well, and this ended up being the springboard for a glorious career for this non-white person when they got into a verbal altercation with an employee about Colin Kaepernick. Right, continuing. I had a conversation with a victim of racism, and this was a while ago, right? Like when I say a while ago, more than 6 months. Problem this person was experiencing on the job. They had a racist suspect, white male. He would just be intrusive, practicing racism, wasting time and energy. We talk about this all the time, whites wasting our time and energy. He would just interrupt with just nonsense. Like, you know, how many pencils do you think you can, you know, put in your mouth at one time? You know, just nonsense while we're at work, you know, on the clock. And so he would do this sort of thing habitually. And so I said what I would do, my counter-racist suggestion. I would tell him, look here, we'll call him Ronald. Look here, Ronald. If you have a question that's related to our duties, our workplace duties, let me know immediately. In fact, as soon as, you know, if something comes up and you think you need to ask me a question or get some information, let me know. I will help you to the best of my ability. If you have some nonsense that is not about our job and you are just coming over here to waste time, I am going to ignore you. And it's not just now. That's going to be for the rest of the day. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to assume that you are about some nonsense. I have work to do. I don't have time to play with you and to look up every 5 minutes to your nonsense questions. So if you're coming to talk to me, it's going to be about business. If you're coming to talk to me about some foolishness, I'm going to ignore you. And I would say this one time. I would even let him know, I'm not going to tell you this again. This is one time. This is what's going to happen from now on. That was my counter-racist suggestion for how to deal with any employee, white, non-white, whoever it is, if they're just coming to waste time and talk to you about, you know, nothing. And so the person didn't want to do this. They're valid reasons, victim of racism, valid reasons. And I mean, hey, Gus T. Renegade, I am a victim of racism myself. So, I mean, I could be talking nonsense. You know your workplace environment better than anyone, including Gus T. So certainly listen to yourself first and foremost. But the individual was resistant to taking my counter-racist suggestion to deal with this because they thought they could be labeled as being aloof, that somehow this could be, hey, you know, you're not communicating with one of our coworkers here, you know, and he thinks that you don't like him and that sort of thing, which, you know, I can see some a mild bit of logic, but particularly if you've been documenting, this is habitual that he's been coming in and doing this sort of thing. And if he's doing this with other individuals in the office, like it can be corroborated that he has a habit office wide of just wasting time and this sort of thing. I don't think this is going to be one that you're going to have a problem at all. Should I entertain his questions? I put it in the form of a question. Should I entertain his questions about how many pencils I can fit in my mouth on company time? And just get that approved by, you know, everybody. And then no problem. Come talk to me anytime you want about anything. But I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway, the person didn't want to do that. So we fast forward 6 months, whatever it is. Guess what? Ronald is still doing the exact same thing. No surprise. That's why I say these are just acts of racism, to just waste your time, waste your time, waste your time. This has been an office-wide thing. In fact, it got so bad that in the 6 months or whatever the time period when I was notified about this, it got so bad that Ronald, this victim of racism, I think the head boss and maybe even one other person were in a meeting where the boss told Ronald, stop doing this. You know, this has been a problem. It's been reported. Stop wasting this person's time. Focus on your work and stop going to her and other individuals with nonsense. Anytime this sort of thing happens, I would request it in writing that this happened on such and such date, Thursday, February 22nd, at, you know, 12:30 p.m., Ronald Hutchinson, or whatever his name is, was verbally notified that he is not to distract his coworkers during work time or whatever it is. I would request that in writing, even if it is in email that goes out to everybody that this took place, creating a paper trail, as they say. That sort of thing, oh man, that puts you in a much more powerful position to deal with him moving forward if this behavior continues. And guess what? It did, of course. And I said, whoa. I've already, now that I'm being notified again and I'm remembering, we already talked about this. I gave a codified suggestion that she didn't want to take, which is fine, VGQ, but you're having the same problem and you didn't apply codification. That's getting to the main thing that I want to talk about. You did not want to apply your understanding of counter-racism for whatever reason, fearful of being, you know, labeled aloof, that it might backfire somehow and cause more problems, but you did not want to apply a counter-racist technique to solving this problem, and the problem just continued. And I think that that happens frequently with victims of racism, where we have an understanding, even if it's, you know, not exactly the same as what Mr. Fuller outlines, or Dr. Welsing, or Dr. Cambon, or myself, or any other victim of white supremacy. We all have our own unique understanding of counter-racism science and what we should be doing to solve this problem. We don't often apply it. I think that has to be the case, so this problem would have been solved. It's not being applied, I think, frequently. And I think particularly in the workplace, I think there is a hesitance to apply our understanding of counter-racism on the job. And I think that's something needs to be addressed, should be addressed, and honestly, from all angles, what are some of the things that are stopping us from applying counter-racism on the job? Because it's been my experience, when we do not apply counter-racism, this is what happens. The problem just continues. Sometimes it gets way worse when we are not actively engaged in, I'm going to stop this problem. That is the essence of counter-racism. I'm going to solve this problem. This is not going to be something that we just sit around and whine and complain about from day to day to day to day to day. February, we go right on into summertime and we're still, no, this is about solving this problem today so we can move on. Friday, man, we can move on to the next problem. We got Ronald checked. He never comes over here ever unless it's about something workplace related. We don't have the nonsense anymore. We got that taken care of. Moved on to the next issue. That's what counter-racism is about, and solving these problems like quickly. So if we have input on that in terms of things, and, you know, certainly we can all be truthful. We're all still learning. If you can reflect on your own experience, things that truthfully stops you from applying counter-racist logic. And then even if you can think of some times where, yep, I knew, you know, some counter-racism techniques. I'd read Mr. Fuller, even, you know, Gus is a moron, but I've been checking out some other people and I can think for myself. I got my own brain computer working and I just didn't do it for whatever reason. I did not apply counter-racism logic on the job. And this is what happened, because I suspect we probably got a number of people who could say, oh, yeah, that was that time I didn't do it on the job, and this is what happened, and it was not good. It did not work out well. I think that would be beneficial, because I know there are a lot of people that are, they are in that position, even if it, as it relates to other non-white people. I think we had some people who even admitted to doing some name calling on the job, or at minimum, not calling other black people by their correct name on the job. That is a part of counter-racism logic, things that we should be doing and just not applying that in the workplace for a variety of reasons. So if we have people that can speak to that, I think that would be helpful for workplace racism. If you have codified suggestions or if you have your own problems, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
We heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. This is Red in Nevada. Just a couple of things that I wanted to share this week. The first thing is actually about my name, and it's really funny with the commentary that you made. And then, last week it really, stuck with me, the commentary that Thomas had made about making sure to call people by their correct names, not like, you know, with the Asian person, quote unquote, Asian person calling them ninja. So with me, I decided in this job, unlike with my past jobs, I'm not going to allow people to call me by a nickname or a shortened version of my name. They must call me by my full name. So with the suspected racist that I was speaking about last week, the one who will just kind of like come up to me and talk to me, or she'll just say my name wrong, I have been making it an effort to correct her every time. Every time she says my name wrong, I say it's this. And then if I have to, then I'll proceed to answer her question. Most of the time, and like sometimes what I've been doing is I'll just ignore her. Because what she'll also do is she'll just kind of get closer to me, or she'll, usually she'll just kind of get closer to me and then she'll start talking. Sometimes it'll be about, you know, just saying her little side story about what we're learning, or it'll be to ask me a question. Now, the thing is that like we have to do these stupid icebreakers. Like I said before, I really don't try to share too much information about myself. But one of the things that she had said is that she knows more than one language. So now English is still her first language, but she knows more than one language. But she still seems to constantly get my name wrong. I started counting, and today she said my name wrong 3 times. So I would say she said my name wrong. So let's just say my name is Deidre. She called me Deborah. So I said, no, it's Deidre. And then she still proceeds to call me Deborah. So today specifically, and I really had to calm down because I was like kind of getting frustrated about it. And I don't know if, you know, I don't feel like she is, I feel like she might've been had maybe some type of mental challenges, because she does not seem like the typical, I'm not going to use that word. She's just really socially awkward, but she said it again. She said, Deborah, real loud again, like it's Deidre. And then I proceeded to answer her question because I couldn't just ignore her, because I know she was talking to me. But then she had the nerve to tell me, I just keep thinking about, you know, the Latin version of your name. So that's why I keep calling you by the wrong name. And so I'm like, okay, well, and she tried to, cause she's long winded. She tried to, you know, keep, you know, this little story going. And so I'm like, okay, thank you, after that whole Latin lie. And so I just kind of walk off, and I had to like take a moment. I was thinking about Emmy, but when she was like, you know, when she had got frustrated or something one time, she said, Dr. Frances Crest Welding, and she kept calling on her name. And I'm like, I did that too. And I kind of, you know, laughed a little bit and just let it go. But then I also looked up, you know, for the entrance, for the, you know, example, I looked up the part, let's say, you know, if my name was Deidre, I looked up, you know, D. And D, what is D in Latin? And it's basically the same thing. So I'm like, these games that these people, these racists play are just ridiculous. But that's just, I guess, the one, that was the main thing. But I'm really trying hard to not let it upset me, because I'm like, if you know more than one language, you can definitely say my name correctly. The last thing that I'll mention is there's this head manager, and I don't know why this quote is sticking in my head, but she was in the same room with us, and they got off topic again, and they were talking about law enforcement officials. And they were talking about how, and this white woman, she had said, you know, it's not about necessarily punishing one person. It's about protecting the community. And I don't know. I just really feel like that's important. I'm not quite sure why. Why I keep thinking about it. I feel like maybe that's the reason why, like, you know, with these mass shooters. And I know, like, in my situation with the Vegas shooting, why maybe that's how they like to, you know, justify it. Well, we don't really care about him, of course, because, you know, the shooter was white. We just want to protect the victim. So that's all I'll say for this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Appreciate that, Red. I think whites do that sort of thing on a regular basis, where they practice white supremacy racism, and then they will use a lot of jargon, sometimes a lot of very sophisticated jargon, that, oh yes, you know, the etymology of your name goes back to ancient Latin. And I mean, they'll get real professorial about it when they're just practicing white supremacy racism. I mean, that's the same tacky thing you all have been doing for eons. Like, don't try to put some sort of slick 21st century veneer on it. Like, my name is Deidre, and that's, thank you. keep it moving. Like, the tackiness abounds. And just, I think for us, for our mental health, in terms of not getting angry, just understanding it as such, like, and trying to spend as little energy on it as, and for me, just identifying it as an act of racism, for me, that helps me cut right through everything else, because then I don't have to think, well, maybe, and well, she did stuff like she's practicing, right? Mm-hmm. And we just continue right on with the rest of the day. I think, at least for me, that helps me decompress much quicker. I don't get, you know, have as much emotion about it, because I'm just able to process things much quicker in terms of what's happening, what I should do, and then, you know, what's going to happen next. Other folks who dialed in, what was the phrase again that you said you couldn't help? It's not about punishing the individual. It's about protecting the community. Is that it?
Yes, that was correct.
Okay. We'll ponder on that as we proceed. And that's, again, that's what to do in these conversations on the job. If it really may be in any environment, but if a white person or even a non-white person, if they're talking about the NFL protests, they're talking about any of these shootings or what have you, they're talking about the movie Black Panther, whatever it is, it's not time to debate. I think someone wrote that in this past weekend for the compensatory call-in. It was about workplace racism, that they just didn't have time to participate. But they were saying that they would challenge some of the quote-unquote liberal whites on their job. That's not what you're on the job to do, to go around and check white people and put them in their place. That's another one where I just have not seen where a black person who is quote unquote telling off a white person, where that becomes the springboard for their career. You really want to be more in a position of observing, taking note, taking meticulous notes about what's happening, being extremely acutely observant about what's happening, what's being said, who said it, when, time, all of that, being very, very meticulous and detail oriented. You are not in a position of doing a whole lot of questioning and talking and talking and talking. You want to be much more in a position of silent observing. When you do when you do speak, you're mostly going to be asking questions, and questions that you have thought about in detail. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have comment or commentary on what we've heard thus far, if you have commentary especially on what keeps us from, or what keeps you specifically from applying counter-racist logic on the job, applying your understanding of counter-racism. I think that would be very important if you can remember specific times where your failure to apply counter-racism on the job and what was the result. That would be grand as well. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
May I proceed?
Heard both of you. Let's see.
The other caller go first.
All right. Thank you for yielding, sir. Caller in Florida.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have a bit more information because I want to try and stretch it out as much as I can. So I've been like cutting it up in portions. This is a mixture of things that I have observed from this weekend and prior weeks. There was a statement that was made by a white woman. It was on the lunch break. And she was talking about a pet that she had, like a guinea pig. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that animal, so like a pet or whatever. And she said when she was younger, she had a pet guinea pig, and it had black and white spots. And she said the name for the guinea pig was Integration. You know, I had noted that. I had jotted that down. The second one was there was a non-white female, and speaking of emotions, things like that, she was very upset and distraught about, I'm not sure what the situation was about, but from what I've heard, it was, she was, I think, very stressed out, and she was having, like, heart problems, and she's, like, in her mid-30s, and she's been in and out of the hospital for like the past 2 months. And I know they have that thing called FMLA or whatever the acronym is. And apparently the other warden, the more powerful female warden, she, this non-white female, she, I guess, really dislikes this person. This the white woman, because I'm not sure if they had any kind of encounters, severe encounters in the past, but while she was out, apparently she faxed a note from the doctor's office saying that, you know, this is where she was, to have a you know, a documentation, you know, documented means showing that she wasn't at work, because if you are out more than 3 days, the policy is you got to have a doctor's note. So, you know, apparently after a month or 2 months, the lady says, you know, she didn't get any facts. I'm not sure if the non-white female kept a copy of this, but she was met with a letter that was on her desk. And apparently from what I've been told, it was saying that she wasn't going to get paid. Okay. And there were white and non-white people supposedly trying to donate vacation hours, I guess, or sick hours to the non-white female. And there was some kind of stipulation about taxes being taken, I guess, or added to the people who wanted to be generous in lending or, you know, giving their time and their hours. So as a result of her not getting any donations from anybody and her not, I guess, getting paid, she was very upset. And, you know, I heard they brought her in the office and talked to her for an hour. And she still came out and just apparently just walked out. And I never seen her again. And she was a person who was another assistant supervisor, because they tend to apply that label and that title to non-white people, or whether they're black or any other non-white label. And while this female is gone, a black male was put in her position. And I talked to this guy, because his anniversary for being on the job was like 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I asked him, I said, you know, how is it? You know, I said, how's your first year being here, you know? And he says, his answer was this, now, I kid you not. He said, I'm still working for the same wage. Like, that was his response. And I said, what's the update with you trying to get your checklist? And he's saying, man, I don't know what's going on. So I said, you know, just trying to check on that. Because remember, like I just said, black male is in charge now, and the white woman walked out crying. So I haven't heard any examples of him utilizing any power to help anybody, especially black people. And okay, like with him moving from his desk, there's also another desk that he sits next to a person who was brought from another building. And this person was given an immediate title and increased compensation. Okay. And he's sitting next to the person who told me that he been working for the same wage. All right. And this white person is like his desk, the way it's like structured, they put a larger attachment on it. Okay, so many people might think this is subtle, but they added a larger piece to his desk to make it look larger than the one that the black male is sitting at. So I thought that was significant. One last thing I wanted to mention was...
Hold up, before you give us the last thing, just in case some folks are listening, why did you think it was significant that the attachment was added to the desk to make it look larger than the desk that was occupied by the black male?
Because the reason I would say that is because, like, there's an office, like, where this desk is positioned, where they added the attachment, the black male that took over that position, his office is right in front. So I'm thinking it could be either two reasons. It could be put there to, I think, definitely practice racism toward the younger black male that is sitting right next to it, because he was dislocated or, you know, relocated from another desk he was at before. So they tried to fill a void from when the female walked out. And they're not paying him more. So this white guy, he was there like 2 years ago, and he was in the other courthouse. So I'm thinking he had to have request more money or some kind of title. Okay, so before he got there, they had the, a couple other guys, you know, come and take a piece of a desk off. And it wasn't nobody sitting at the desk. And they brought this piece from the basement area, and they actually attached it on there and set the computer up and everything. While this other guy is there, and you know, I can tell he was like kind of upset, but I know he doesn't really want to voice it necessarily. But that's, I found that significant because it looks like it's set up in a way for people to walk into it, almost like it's almost sticking out in a way to kind of agitate, you know, somebody. Does that make any sense?
You said it sticks out in a way, almost in a manner to agitate someone.
Right. Like it's like the way that you walk out of the office from where the, it's a bathroom that's like on the side of it. But you wouldn't necessarily walk into it if you can see it. But if you weren't paying attention, you could walk into it.
I see. Got it. Thank you for the clarification. Appreciate that. You had another example you were going to get to?
Yes, sir. There was this one that happened just today. It was a customer who came in, and we encountered this maybe like one or two times before. I think his first name was Brandon or something like that. And apparently he was looking up his name, you know, and like for the case history to show a list of his cases and charges. And he said he had a situation where he was trying to get, he was trying to apply to get into an apartment or something. And someone else came up with his same name, first, middle, and last name. And it was a person who was accused of being a sex offender. All right. So we was trying to look up, you know, this person's case, and we couldn't find nothing because we only can look up something, you know, that's within the confines of our county, you know, at the courthouse. So he was saying that he kept being told that it was a black guy. Okay. Now, he ain't have no other information except that it was a black guy. And something, you know, so I was like, well, could this person, you know, be living here or living in another city or something? And he was like, you know, I don't really know. And, you know, this could really mess me up. It was him and his girlfriend. It was some young white girl that went up. So what was very interesting, okay, he said, man, this guy could be out there and, you know, he might be getting help. He might be getting help off of my name. So basically saying that this, I guess, imagined black person, because he ain't prove it to me. You know, he ain't proved that this person existed. He said that, you know, this could be the same name, but he said that they didn't sound like they were even certain. He just kept telling us that he was a black guy. So he practiced racism, because he's saying that since the other guy has his same name, that he's benefiting off of him being white. Okay. Even though he has charges, criminal charges. So he's obtaining resources through a background check and saying that he would be successful because he's the white person with the same name. Like, you see what I'm saying, Gus?
I was laughing a little bit, but let me make sure that I have got this correct. So this is a white person who is coming down, and apparently the name associated with this white person is coming up as a sex offender. And he's saying that there's somebody else out there with the same name that is the sex offender, not him, and that the person who is the sex offender is black, and voicing his displeasure that this alleged black sex offender is out somehow getting benefits or something in association with him, because they're thinking that it's the white guy with the same name. He's voicing his displeasure about that, even though there's no actual proof or evidence that there is another person that is black who is the sex offender, not this guy. Is that it?
Yes, sir. That's it. Okay. I had to think about it for a little while. And then, you know, and he just said it very, what some people might call it casually. And he, you know, him and his girlfriend was trying to, they was about to get a marriage license. So while they was waiting to go to this, the office for the session, you know, we was trying to look up the information, and, you know, he came out and said that, well, you know, he's probably, you know, getting things based off of my name, but yet he got traffic tickets. You know what I'm saying? He got misdemeanors and whatnot. So even in his mindset that he has criminal charges, he's still saying that he's white, and hey, you know, that's the difference here. And I'm still, you know, more valued than you. And then he hadn't even proved the person exists because we couldn't find him.
So he could have been the sex offender, yes?
That's what I'm thinking too.
Come on. I'm just going to take the easy Jerry Sandusky logic that until proven otherwise, you are the sex offender. And that's just, I mean, if he's, Yeah, I'm just going to take the Jerry Sandusky logic. Until proven otherwise, you are the sex offender and you're practicing white supremacy racism, trying to blame it on a... Oh, man. Woo! At the courthouse, that is the place to be to study racism, white supremacy. Incredible. Incredible. Wow. Was that it? Did I interrupt the narrative, or was that it?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. They said they were going to try to get on to Google to see if they could search anything in any other counties down here in Florida, because we only just have just what we have in our county. So, you know, we can't really search any other kind of area for any other kind of results.
Wow. Sex offender practicing white supremacy racism, and even seeing the logic there that I am white, this imagined, fabricated black rapist, he is getting over on my white name. Even there, the racist logic that he is putting forth. But sex offender, racist, white supremacist. Wow. What a workplace. That I did from some of the other, I guess, anecdotes that you shared, I thought it was important as well. The racists on the job with the black female who lost her job, and the, I guess, other people, they were going to try to donate leave time for her. And they said, oh, wait a minute, we got to tax that if you're going to do it, which ended up stopping people from donating. That sort of thing, very, very common in the system of white supremacy, where they will find all kinds of arcane laws to enforce when it comes to a black person getting constructive help. They will make it astronomically difficult and that's the sort of thing, too, where Mr. Fuller talks about, if you have been there, or if you have access to someone who has been there 20 years, now, is this the same way that you all have done this before? When other people have donated hours, like, oh, yeah, because I was here in 1998, and Susan Smith got, you know, 20 hours donated, and nobody taxed those donations, so why are we not doing it in the same manner? That's what you talked about, but again, you would have to have access. Either you would have to have been there yourself for a long time, or you would have to know other people who've been there a while to be able to say, hey, do you recall a time where, you know, people have donated hours before, and what was the procedure? And see, that's why I said, to see if you can cultivate a source that can be very, very valuable in a workplace. If you know one or two people who have worked there for a long time, like 15 years or more, and you can just go and ask them questions about things, policy, that sort of thing, can be very, very useful in the workplace. But I thought that was important. And also, because that seems like a pattern. It seems like, if I heard correctly, at least two different times where a black female lost the job and then they gave it to a black male. Because I think you had told us last week about a black female who was poor. She didn't lose a job, but she was promised a position and she didn't get it, and they gave it to a black male. So that would be, that seems like at least a pattern, right? Two different times where that sort of thing happened, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Just something to pay attention to. They can do it the other way if they want to. They can find two black males, make them lose their job, and then give it to two black females, or whatever, racist man, racist woman, racist child. They are in charge of the plantation. Just, they can do that sort of thing to create all kinds of conflict. And the most important thing I thought to keep in mind, the black male who said, all this switching of titles and me getting showcased, I still make the exact same amount of cornbread that I made when I first got here. That is the system of white supremacy. Don't get confused about where we are, man. Thank you. Outstanding details. Appreciate caller in Florida, the black male who yielded the floor. Did you want to share?
Yes. Greetings to host and to the listeners. I ask understanding, because I'm with the three little ones this evening, so I try to keep everybody's volume low so I can speak a little bit. Yes, I wanted to share a couple of instances, workplace racism. The first was at the courthouse. So I guess we're going back to the courthouse in a situation where I had to, my work truck, I changed and bought another used work truck and needed to register the vehicle. So I went to the courthouse pretty early in the morning. I believe I got there about 10 o'clock. The process should normally take about 15, 20 minutes. And that's just really the line. You show them your paperwork and you register your vehicle so you could get your title for the vehicle. I've had problems with car registrations in the past, and some would say frivolous tickets and from the authorities. And so I, you know, wanted to kind of nip that in the, I wanted to just get to the bottom of it and make sure that I got on top of that and not let it become a problem again. So I got to the courthouse early in the morning to take care of this, and was called to the desk after about 15 minutes of waiting. Just as a small side note, I was sitting next to a white male who was head to toe covered in tattoos, and his body was almost darkened by the tattoos. And Dr. Wilson came to mind in her comments about white people feigning like they have melanin with the tattoos. And it's interesting because a black female that was sitting next to me, she was a lot older, maybe in her early 70s, sat there, and whenever the white male moved, she scooted over to me, and she said, mm-mm-mm, what a shame. That, look at him. Look, how he ever going to get anything done? And I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, he can have tattoos from head to toe, but I'm pretty sure he'll probably make more money than both of us in the next, like, 6 days or something, regardless of what he looks like. But anyway, it came to mind how, you know, he was just moving along briskly in the world with tattoos from literally head to toe. His whole head was covered in tattoos. He was bald-headed, so I don't know if he was, you know, what he was. But anyway, so I was called up to being helped for my vehicle, and a young white male suspected racist was at the desk. And so he said, you know, everything looks good, everything looks great. And then when he got to the last page, he started putting stuff in the computer, and then he said, oh, you're missing an inspection. So I said, all right, okay, cool. You know, I can go get an inspection. It can get done, you know. So I took my papers back. I left, ran out of the courthouse, you know, left, and went to get an inspection. I come back two and a half hours later. I come back, so it's about noon, 12:30. I'm hoping there's not a long line. I wait in line again, and I go up to another teller, white female, suspected racist, and she goes through my paperwork. Everything's good. She starts putting stuff in the computer, and then she says, everything's here, except are you missing your tax exemption form? And I was like, no, I just left here a couple hours ago. I was talking to that guy right there. He said, you know, I just needed an inspection. That's all I needed left. And so, no, she's like, no, I can't do anything if you don't have that tax exemption form. And I was like, oh, okay. She's like, yeah, Jackson County tax exemption, you know, office is right, you know, across the street. You should be fine. And I said, well, I recently moved from Clay County. Oh, she's like, oh, that means you have to go to Clay County to get this form. So Clay County is about 15 miles, I want to say 15 miles to get to the office. I think that's what the GPS said. So I was thinking to myself, like, what is going on? And I was like, that would have been very simple for him to, have told me all of the documents that I needed when I was there at 10 o'clock in the morning, to get this done. So I leave, I have to drive 15 miles to Clay County, wait in line. I go to their courthouse, yeah, Clay County, the Northland of Missouri, it's very trashy white area. It's very difficult for me to move around there. So I get there and I get to their courthouse, and they're very, very dry with me normally when I'm there. I just in and out. I get back to Kansas City, Missouri's courthouse, where I'm getting my registration done. Now we're at 3 o'clock now. So we went from 10 in the morning, right? So we're at 3 o'clock. The day is gone. There's no opportunity for me to do any work, to do anything like that. And I hop back in line. The white female says, you know, don't wait in line next time. Just come right up to me. I go and stand next to her desk, but she happens to have another white lady who she put on that same queue, who is bumped in front of me. I'm a young white female, is bumped in front of me. And then, so I'm still waiting in line now for 15 minutes. And this is supposed to be the shortcut. So it's 3:30 now. I'm just, at this point, happy the office hasn't closed on me and I'm able to get this done. She takes my paperwork and in literally less than 10 minutes, the process was complete. I suspect that somebody was practicing racism, and I'm really, and I think, you know, when I think the previous caller spoke about the name and their name calling and mispronouncing their name, and I think the advice you might have given was that that could have been an act of racism, and just to categorize it like that to help decompress. I think that that is really helpful in my instance, because it's really, it can make you feel as if you are having psychological problems, but it's really not. And that's I think, the danger of white supremacy and the insidiousness of it. And my second example I want to give of or just other advice for workplace racism is for those who carry a concealed firearm with them, and who decide, especially non-white black people who choose to carry a concealed firearm. And I think it's been spoken about a lot of times, you know, about making choices. Some would even call it an area of maximum compensatory. But I would say I do carry a concealed firearm with me most of the time, not only at home or in my neighborhood or also when I'm working. But I think when you're a non-white black person and you do that, you really have to understand the risks. Sometimes you might forget and leave it on and go into, and it's not visible, but if you go into a building and the question came up between me and my spouse, we were talking about, you know, what if there was a shooting building? Like, would I shoot the person who's shooting? And I said, no, I'm probably not going to do that because I'm not going to help white people. Like, that's just not what I'm there for. But then again, there's so many other ramifications. So as a non-white person who decides to carry a firearm, that has to be taken into context, specifically if you're carrying at work or like myself, you're self-employed and you keep it in your vehicle, you have it on you when you're moving around. You definitely have to keep that in mind and think about that before you decide to do it. And you know, I have to say, even I think about it, I even question, even though I do question whether I will continue to do it or not. So I just want to put that out there for some of the listeners who may decide to do that. I'll take my call offline. Thank you. Peace.
Appreciate that. And highest commendations to attempted black parents, black fathers, attempted black mothers. Very important, outstanding work you're doing with the young folks there, parenting. Also, just totally unrelated, the view that I have in my temporary spot from the flood, it's on a hill. Capitol Hill is the neighborhood. Seattle has tons of monstrous hills. It snowed yesterday, may snow again today, and there's lots of ice. And so I'm just watching people go back and forth up the hill. I suspect I am going to see someone tumble before we go off the air. As for the different workplace situations, the first vignette, time and energy, that's something that I talk about consistently. Racists, they find ways to consume and squander the time and energy of non-white people, especially black people. Man, I hear that sort of thing all the time with black people. That's why I say, even if you are going to be self-employed, I think that's how you identified, sir. Other black people that I know, like personally know, who are entrepreneurs, black entrepreneurs, as they say, you still might have to go and talk to a race soldier to get a business license. In fact, I've seen where that sort of thing happens pretty frequently, where you might need to go get a certain piece of paperwork. If you're going to have an establishment and sell alcohol, you might need a piece of paperwork from a white person to be able to do that. Liquor license, as they say. Opportunities for racism, white supremacy to be practiced against black entrepreneurs abound. That is one right there, time and energy. And I have seen that where it's, oh, yeah. Just come in, this piece of documentation, this. It'll be this fee. No problem. You come. I've seen where it's the fee is $500 and boom, paperwork. Come in. We'll take care of it. Black person went in. They had the $500. They had all the paperwork. And they said, oh, you know what? I made a mistake. The fee isn't going to be $500. The fee is going to be $5,000. I have seen that, witnessed it. Yes. Same exact sort of thing where they just waste your time and energy. And then you have to go back 15 miles. Are you serious? On the other side, wasting your time and energy as a parent. Imagine if he had the children with him that day and then had to do all the, or maybe he did, I don't know, doing all this zigzagging with them in tow and you got to run over here and there and do all this. I mean, come on, just wasting your time and energy for something that 10 minutes after we get said and done, wait behind the white woman in the queue, 10 minutes, boop, all done. Something that could have been handled easily, I'm sure, at the very beginning, but wasting time and energy. The concealed carry, as you said, certainly lots to think about. You have to be very codified if you are going to do that. I think some of the folks who have called in before, black people who've called in before who do carry, have just talked about that importance of being codified, especially if your line of work might, you know, require you to carry. That is lots to consider, lots to codify. You definitely have to be dedicated to being codified if that's going to be the position that you take. And always appreciate hearing black people, victims of racism, say that they are in the business of not helping whites. Grand. If other folks have commentary, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have commentary. I believe we have Stacy from the UK with us as well at 2:14 a.m. on Friday. Stacy, are you with us?
Hi, Gus.
Morning. Grand to hear from you. It's been, this is like the first time 2018 that we have heard from Stacy live. Grand that you made it to the new year.
Mm-hmm. Good to have you back too, Gus.
Indeed. Do you have any commentary you want to share, or are you just listening for the time being?
I was actually about to ask you, because I was listening to the compensatory call-in program from Saturday, and there was someone who had wrote in about the person of colour network or group that was being established in their organisation, and they were going to be meeting with their senior management. And I was just wondering if there had been an update on that. And I know the person last week was asking for advice about how they should proceed. And I think you did reference that I was looking at a similar network for the organisation that I work for. And just to say, I've had similar experiences in the acts of sabotage. I mean, to be honest with you, it wasn't my idea to set up the network anyway. It was just something that we were asked about by a senior manager. There are other networks that exist for a women's network and also an LGBTQ network. And I believe there is or has been discussion around setting up a disability network. But the specific conversation in relation to non-white staff was whether or not anyone was interested in either a BAME, so I guess that would be the equivalent of the people of colour network, or black and minority ethnic as it stands for in the UK, or a network for black staff specifically. That initial conversation started last June. I did pull together some staff who attended that discussion, just to start shaping up ideas now I wasn't, as I said, I didn't have an opinion necessarily on whether one should exist or not, whether that be a BAME or a person of colour, a black network specifically. The plan was to do a survey of all non-white staff in the organisation, because it was only a small number of people at the initial meeting. So, you know, it would depend on what people voted on. However, that actually hasn't happened as yet. But what I did do was get some of the people who attended the initial meeting together, because my opinion really is that those kind of networks, yeah, great if you want them. You know, I'm sure there might be some interesting events that can be put on that be educational, opportunities for staff to network and maybe support each other where there are issues. However, that's not really going to do much for addressing the underlying issues if there is discrimination or racism being practiced in an organisation, particularly when it comes to the things that really, really matter, which is a lack of progression, salary discrepancies, and just mistreatment. Those things are not going to be addressed by having a network. So what I was very keen to do was to get some people together to start putting together some ideas, which built on, A, okay, if people want to do a network, fine, but also some specific initiatives that the employer would put in place to support some real progression and staff retention within the organisation. And so I got a group of people together, as I said. I developed up the idea as a sort of a high-level ideas paper, discussed it with them, and to cut a long story short, that was shared with HR and managers, because I didn't have HR in the room. And because I've been, as you know, dealing with grievance, I'm still not back at work. So there was a gap between me developing up the paper, writing up the notes, and sending it to the group director. And lo and behold, I found out that the idea had been shared, and without my knowledge. And so they had developed up a similar program for women. And that is being taken forward. Now, that is soon to be launched. I understand the strategy was developed before Christmas, but it hasn't been launched just yet, I think, because there are other management changes going on. And the aim is to increase or have parity of pay for women in the organisation with men. Now, in reality, we know that this women's title does not mean all women. So the people who need the help most will not be getting the help most. And that is at the hands of non-white staff who were, I knew anyway, were there to spy on behalf of management. And in terms of the actual discussion around the network, there was a meeting that took place just before Christmas. Yeah, I think it was just before Christmas. I was copied in on email correspondence. And I said, "All right, I'll join by conference call." And then I thought, the better of it. I decided this is just too much for me to waste my time with. So I've been withdrawing gracefully, as was mentioned last week. And they are now being told that HR and senior management are very keen to have a BAME network. And it will be run under these conditions, so specifying exactly how it should be run. Only at the moment, there are no the staff that are meeting about it, they're not keeping me in the loop. I haven't necessarily told them I'm not going to get involved, but I've just been withdrawing. But they were supposed to keep me copied in the correspondence. So they haven't been. But apparently, I know that I understand from somebody who they have pushed to speak to me about it. They're keen for it to be taken forward. Some people don't have the time, or they're a bit uncomfortable about pushing themselves forward, because it might look bad on them, I guess. I certainly won't be taking it forward, not because of necessarily being concerned about standing out, although obviously that is a consideration, but just because I think it's a complete waste of time. But I'm not going to tell them I think it's a waste of time. I'm just going to, well, in fact, what I did say was when I pulled people together to come up with ideas that would support the development of black staff in the organisation, it wasn't so that I could be the person who would run the network. I wasn't necessarily saying it should be me. And anyway, I think it's a process where you need to be elected. But yeah, I mean, so the point is, as was discussed last week, it's all a charade. Suspected racists know how to use black staff against each other. And ultimately, if an organisation wants to treat all staff equally and justly, they will. You won't need a network to do it. But I'm in my line there, Gus.
Appreciate that, Stacey, joining us live from the UK very, very early on Friday morning over there. I think that's important for a myriad of reasons. Again, global problem, system of white supremacy. And you see the same patterns going to the core, in my view, of what it means to be white, because they do the same things wherever they happen to be in the known universe. You heard they hear her brilliance and take her idea and say, oh, yes, we'll make a white women's network. Yes, that'll be great. And we'll launch it in the coming weeks. That'll be great. That, I think, was talked about this Saturday. If the young lady who wrote me the information about they were having kind of a black staff network, and she was talking about whether or not she could maybe meet with some of the people privately and share some ideas or write something that could be presented anonymously at work to address some of these issues. She wrote in, if you are present, if you're able to write in, or if you're able to dial in, that would be great. If at minimum, if you want to write us an email update that could be read, that would be awesome too. Untiljustice@gmail.com. But if you could call in, that would be great. But I said on the compensatory call in this past weekend, you must assume anything that you say, if it's in the workplace, if it is to anybody, a coworker, white, non-white, black, doesn't matter, assume if you are saying it to them, it's going to be repeated to every single person who has ever worked for the company. It is being recorded, video. There's going to be a transcript that will be available online in 50 different languages. Like, that's just the way that you think. So that you're not surprised if, you know, you share an idea and it's stolen and they just, you know, have moved on in a different direction, or you say something and then you're being questioned about it later, because that happens so frequently. It just means being very, very, talked about at the beginning, being very, very codified about what we share, what we don't share, and just assuming everything that I say, yep, this is going to be public knowledge. This is going to be recorded. I'm talking to every single person who has ever worked for this company. I'm speaking to everybody when I talk to this one person, even if it's a room full of black people. I think that is hugely important aspect of workplace codification. And I think also the comments that you were saying about these, whatever you want to call it, staffing efforts or whatever it is, that they're not going to solve the problem, that if white people in charge, if they want to have justice practiced in the corporation, they can do that without any of these staffing meetings. Exactly right. Exactly right. Very important to keep that in mind. Again, the young lady who wrote in and was asking for suggestions, if you're available, if you can dial in and give us an update, that would be super appreciated. Other folks who dialed, if you have commentary, if we've not heard from you, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm greetings to you, Gus. Greetings to the listeners and greetings to the callers. This is basically an update from last week. I had an actual interaction with a suspected racist white supremacist at my company, where this client was basically yelling, using profanity, and I informed my manager prior to the actual incident because I sensed tension between me and him already, but we had a meeting the next day in regards to this client, and I found out that I will no longer be working with him. The unfortunate thing that I didn't like in regards to the way the situation was handled was that I wasn't included in this meeting in regards to my performance. So they had a full-blown meeting with this suspected racist white supremacist, and I wasn't even involved to even speak my piece or even clarify anything that that had been done or was misconstrued. So essentially, I heard through word of mouth, through my co-workers, exactly some of the things that were said. This man stated that I didn't perform my job properly. All the deliverables that he claimed that I was supposed to do, I did not do. He stated that when we were working together, I failed to write down things that needed to be addressed that he had issues with. This also was a lie. I have an email of 12 of the actual things that he requested. Out of the 12, there were two left with half the week remaining. And those two things left had to be addressed by other groups that had no connection with me. So this wasn't a scenario where I left things dry. It was just a scenario where it's out of my control. Upon hearing all this, I forwarded the information to my manager. My manager basically somewhat reassured me, but I never feel reassured in any situation like this, that they're aware that he can be difficult. And going forward, I was basically told to not deal with him at all anymore, like leave him be, even if he calls in and requests a tech that let somebody else go upstairs outside of myself, which I have no issue with. He also basically created another lie and stated that I missed an appointment. Obviously, me being a black male, that's more believable than anything else. But I also have an email backing that up because I was at his door waiting for him for 30 minutes and he never showed up. And I also forwarded that to my manager as a backup just in case. What I'm going to do further is just create a file to have as a backup and just to make sure if anything else occurs later on down the line that I can cover myself with HR, with anybody else that makes any other claims in regards to my performance. But notably, this man was British, and I wanted to point this out is that in my company, it's a very, very big company. It's international, all these other things. There's a trend going on in my company, and I'm in New York City, where they're bringing in a lot of European men. And I have no idea why. I don't know why the trend is occurring. There has to be some reasoning for it. But all these European men that are coming in, I'd say there have been 5 or 6 in the last 4 months. 4 of them are just completely nasty, tacky. They curse, yell. They have no respect for anybody, it seems like, in the office, not even regular white people that they classify themselves white. It seems like because they're British, they have some kind of superiority over even the other whites here in America. And because even this client was yelling after I didn't deal with him anymore. My other coworkers dealt with him that are white, and they concluded that, yes, he's nasty. He's tacky. He curses, yells for frivolous things. So I just wanted to point that out because I heard Stacey on just before, and I wanted to know does she see any trends like this occurring where she is as well? Like if she's seeing European men coming or leaving and going to the States here, predominantly in New York City. That'll be all for now. I'll mute my line.
Yes, Stacey.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't pay that much attention to, I guess, people immigrating. So no, I wouldn't necessarily be able to answer that question, I'm afraid. I guess if you're working for a global company, though, it's perhaps not that surprising that they may move people around. And with Brexit, maybe there will be more of a trend for people to start going to other regions such as the US. So maybe that might be something that increases more in the future. But it's not something I've been tracking. Sorry. I'll mute my line, guys.
Context of white supremacy. Just my thoughts on what was shared in your situation. I think any time in the workplace where there are accusations against a non-white person that you did this or you didn't do this, something you did incorrect, always take that very seriously. Particularly when you know you have been doing an exemplary job with documenting, which it sounds like in this situation you have. And I would just go one by one, not being emotional. Sounds like what you did, not being emotional, just these are the charges. Let's go one by one and see if there's any merit. So I was charged with, you know, not doing this, not delivering the service. You have all your documentation. And you just present the evidence to go one by one to refute the charges. And then if you get to the end, then you just say, it seems like, you know, we have a series of meritless charges, false accusations, one might say. And we can just go from there. But I'm sure that they know if they have the evidence. You said, I think that you had forwarded the email about you showing up for the delivery and, you know, all the information that you had been doing your work all along. I'm sure that they know that this guy is practicing racism, doing what he's doing. I think they use the term that this guy can be difficult or whatever. They know, you know, he's practicing racism. That's, you know, what he does. I would just, you know, want to be clear about the charges to make sure that, you know, this was found to be, all of these charges were found to be without merit, to make sure that there's nothing peculiar in my, you know, employee book or in my personnel record that reflects, you know, that I, even a hint that there was something incorrect about my conduct in all this. I did everything correct. And this guy was just, you know, however they want to frame, being difficult. But, you know, you were doing sterling work. I would just make sure that that's correct, that is reflected in how this is written up. And boop, keep moving forward and keeping excellent documentation. That would just be a great reminder. I'm going to make sure that I stick to my codification, document everything. If I go out, person is not here, make sure everything is documented, as you said, backing things up, making sure that, you know, other, if your supervisors, managers, other people, that they also have copies of any pertinent information. Going to make sure that I stay exemplary with that, because I'm sure I will run into other racists in my time at this company. So keep up the outstanding work with the documenting. Did other folks have commentary or their own situations that they wanted to share? If you have a hand up, line should be open.
Copy, her.
Yes, sir. Greetings, Thomas in New York.
Greetings, Gus. How are you?
Right poorly.
Oh, I know, right poorly. Before I even give a situation, I said it before that the area law, in particular court, it's the number one area where whites practice dominant white power, white supremacy. Second is the hospital. I worked at both places, and the court beats the hospital by at least 10 times. You know, the system itself is just ran by racist policy, and it's enforced by racists. White injustice and justice have always been the number one problem for us, and used to take place under a tree. And sometimes they left with pieces of us as reminders. But traffic court, criminal court, family court, the most racist court I've ever seen. And I hate to say, I mean, even though people aren't going to jail, but talk about defunding people, taking their economic freedom away from them. So I remember when I was on the show, when I was working at the court, and I told you that I would go to drop paperwork off. And what that gentleman said was so true, that they would not help me until they realized that I was doing this as a job. They see me every day like, oh, man, why are you over there? Come over here. It was just like a piece of cake. It was nothing. They're not there to help you. It's unfortunate. And the gentleman who works at the court over the years, I think he has the most stories of flat-out racist activity taking place in that courthouse. And tonight, when he said that they call their guinea pig because it's black and white integration, that was hilarious. That was like, that's just the white cleverness. Because remember, Gus, back in, I can't even tell you the year, it was at San Diego State, and the black man was being called three-fifths. I mean, that's the type of cleverness that they went to call that hamster integration. Like, that took thought. That took a little, thought. To the gentleman who just spoke, I noticed from my experience working in New York, most companies are multinational. They're doing business on a whole bunch of continents. So therefore, dealing with people from Britain or France or whatever, that's going to happen. And they're usually rude. But that's a part, as I was told, that's a part of their culture. It is what it is. I would hope that you're able to get out of that situation without it being put on your record. However, just the fact that they had a meeting for you, it makes you feel like, terrible. So, I wish the best for you. I do have a couple of minuscule ones compared to this, what I've heard so far. So I'll mute my line and let other people get in. But thank you for taking my call, Gus.
Indeed. Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. Other folks, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you want to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Greetings, Gus. I hope you're doing well or better than before. I'm calling. I'm the student that goes to, it plays rugby at UNCG, North Carolina. I'm happy to admit that I finally quit rugby, put an applaud there. I really don't even know what I was. It was too much. I began to have to fight, not like quite physically, but it was going down that route. I do want to say to the caller before, there is a trend of European men coming from Europe. I had put down some notes as of why they come and they dominate the classrooms and basically like all like facets of like communication. There's a lot of Europeans there. I think that has something to do with there always being a white leadership role, the whitest leadership role, I would say. And I think that has a lot to do with it, but I digress. When I was playing rugby, most recently, they became sort of handsy with me when I was playing. Instead of like, say, for example, if there's a good play or a bad play, usually players will like pat each other on the back. It's okay, man, or it's better luck next time or good job. It was starting to become very, devious. It was, how should I say, one good situation was while we were at practice, we were doing tackle drills. And I had noticed that there was another, this is a new European guy there. And I guess he was matched up with me. So as we were doing the drills, I see that the other guys, like, it's a mainly white team. They were huddled over, I guess, I don't know what they were talking about, but later on I come to find out it was me. So we got up, we messed up the tackle, and he hit me in my knee, which is not from, like, my knee is bad, and it's been that way. I think they may have been plotting that, being very tacky. It's just a lot going on. I don't have my notepad with me now, but maybe when I make it back home.
Your volume dropped. Your volume dropped. If you could speak up or speak, get closer to the microphone. Still not hearing you. Still not hearing you. Not sure if you're having audio difficulty or shifting around. Hope you're not in the vehicle on your cellular. Dangerous and behavior that can warrant being stopped by enforcement officials in some parts of the land, so they tell me.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I faded out. I don't have my notepad on me now, but maybe I'll check back in with, I guess, more of the information that I have recorded. But I'll let the caller speak.
Righto. Appreciate that. Much obliged. Number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Just my general view, if you're a college student or what have you, I'm not sure I would be participating in any extracurricular activities that are going to put me in danger, put me in harm's way. For collegiates, that would certainly mean anything that's going to involve drinking. Yeah, even if it's going to be some sort of alleged study activity, if it's going to be an environment where alcohol is being consumed, I will pass. Even if they're going to meet at the library, if they're going to have sneak shots in, I'm good. I pass on that. Anything that's involving physical activity, even if it's intramural, where it's going to involve physical activity, in my view, that is beyond just tacky. That is terroristic. That is, you know, plotting violence against another black person. I mean, that's serious. Like, I mean, you know, hitting somebody in the lee or in the knee or a leg. I mean, people can end up having lifetime injuries as a result of, you know, that sort of thing. The knees, that can be a delicate thing. That can end up being, you know, limping or having an awkward walk or anything for a life. I mean, that's super, super serious and super violent, terroristic, predatory behavior. And I just feel like that sort of environment, I would think twice about that sort of thing, particularly if it's just at an intramural level, giving why. And in fact, I just told another victim of racism this, who enjoys playing lacrosse, and I said the same thing, like, oh man, like they get a weapon. You can go out and just swing it. Whoops, sorry, my fault. And then go snick. I'm like, man, come on. And then I think as soon as I was verbalizing that, it did happen. Somebody got hit really hard from behind. They just used the lacrosse stick as a weapon and, you know, hit the person really hard in the back. No penalty was called, anything like that. I just would think, you know, really hard about participating in any sports where it's going to be violent contact with whites because they're racist, sadistic, and terroristic tendencies are going to shine through invariably. I'll leave that there. Other folks, anybody that we missed completely, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary that you would like to share, if you have commentary on what's been discussed thus far, if you have suggestions, that's always appreciated. Or if you have your own situation, and certainly what I discussed before, if people have thoughts or even your own reflections on what stops you from applying counter-racism on the job, applying your understanding of counter-racist logic on the job, and if you can even think of specific times where you knew, according to counter-racist logic, this is what I should do, but you didn't do it. And this is what happened when you did not follow through in your counter-racism code. I think that would be helpful because I think a lot of victims of racism that is happening where we are not applying counter-racist logic, even though we know the counter-racist logic. We know what we should do according to codification, but we don't do it in the workplace specifically.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
First, I want to say, Gus, that, man, I'm so glad that you're back. So glad. So to start off with that, to answer your question, I got a couple of thoughts there. One is when you know that your manager is a potential race soldier or racist suspect, and they're doing things that may be in some ways appear to be racist in their behavior. And when you know that they're the ones that have to sign off on your reviews and or to approve or disapprove of your increased salary increases. I say that because of a few scenarios that happened with my manager. And, you know, the way I responded, I'm not sure if it was the best way, but again, he's the one that signs off on my review. So let me give you a couple scenarios first, and then I'll jump right into his behavior. First of all, on my job, there's only two blacks in the whole building of about 100 employees there. I'm one of the two. And there's one person, an admin person, who is not a direct report to me, but it's kind of a dotted line to me. So she does work for me to help out with the department, and then I have one direct report. One day I was talking to my direct report. First thing in the morning, I'm standing in this cubicle talking business, and she comes down the aisle and says, "Hey," someone calls his name, interrupts me while I'm talking to him, and just comes right on and just says, "Oh, nobody wants to hear what you have to say." And, "Hey, you know, I didn't know it was your birthday," talking to the other person. "I didn't know it was your birthday. How was your birthday?" And I really had to stop her in the tracks and said, well, wait a minute. We're talking business right now. That's very rude of what you just did. So you can talk after I finish talking. We're talking business right now." And I got right back into the conversation without skipping a beat. And, you know, she really stood there, kind of shocked that I, you know, just stopped her dead in her tracks. But, you know, it was just, it makes me believe and think more than once when I hear a response from a white person at work when they say something and they kind of joke and kind of chuckle about it. Because when she said that, nobody wants to hear what you have to say, ha ha, you know, and then starts talking directly to that other person. It really makes me believe and think that that's what they really mean. You know, when they kind of say it and kind of chuckle about it and kind of wait for your response, that's what they kind of really mean to me. They really intended that. Here's another scenario where, well, let's talk about my manager now. So one scenario, I'm standing by the cooler, in the bathroom the cooler, talking to another white person, just generic conversation, and he walks down towards us and just interrupts the conversation and just talks directly to the other white person and just totally interrupts and starts talking something, talking about something, nothing to do with work, kind of joking about, and just, you know, just totally interrupted that whole conversation and just kind of left me standing there. And it didn't really dawn on me that maybe that was a racist behavior, but the more I kind of look at patterns, I really kind of believe that, you know, that he does have some racist tendencies there. So I just kind of walked off. And another scenario, I'm in his office, we're talking about business-related things. Up comes another manager, kind of peeks in and says, "Hey, you know, I did such and such, and this person, did you hear about such and such?" And just as a quick, you know, peek in, say something, okay, and I'm off and running type of, you know, conversation. Well, the conversation I'm having with the manager, he just totally disregards what I'm talking about and just has a conversation, starts having a conversation with that other person, just butt right in. And it starts going on for minutes. They're going back and forth, And I'm sitting there saying, "What? I don't believe this is happening." You know, that someone can come right in and just kind of just butt in, and the whole conversation just shifts totally away from me as if I'm not even there anymore. And then sometimes, you know, and that's happened more than once. And sometimes he'll say, "Sorry about that," after or whatever. But I see that as a common thing that people do in the office there. I think that's kind of rude, but then I think it's somewhat racist behavior as well. Another case where the same manager, I rally up a few other managers together, try to address and deal with some other work-related topics. And he walks by and he sees us, you know, meeting, and I'm heading up that meeting. And he comes in, "Hey, you know, what's going on? You know, you guys didn't invite me." And, well, it wasn't, you know, he wasn't invited. It was just between us to try to, you know, do some brainstorming. We were writing things on the board, now we're brainstorming. And he totally hijacks that whole meeting. It just takes over. And I'm sitting there, and I knew it was going to happen. As soon as I saw him coming, I knew it was going to happen, that he was going to take over. And it brought me back to, you know, sometimes when I'm listening in on your show, it's almost as if when you don't know things, and you probably heard people say this, when you don't know things, you don't know about racist behaviors, you kind of blind to it, you don't really see or you know, see those things happen. But now once you start hearing and seeing, it's like, oh my goodness, it's happening all the time, and it's happening every day almost. And so I'm sitting there and I'm fuming, and I'm sitting in my seat and I'm saying, gosh, I knew it was going to happen. And so I just kind of spoke up and just said, you know what, let us just continue what I'm doing here. We're brainstorming. I'll come back to you and give you some of the results and things that we were talking about and what we thought, you know, because everybody else in the meeting just really just kind of shifted off of me as well as being the leader of this meeting and just focused on that manager again who came just hijacked the whole meeting. So again, it kind of goes back to, I think I might have heard you say more than once, where white people really don't like to take direction or be led by black people. So I kind of see that. I see that happen. After that meeting, it was about another month or so later, a month or two later, where now it's time for my review. Well, in my review, everything, flying colors, I did everything right, and you know, gave me a great review and still got the minimum average percentage increase. And I kind of went back and challenged that, said, you know what, these are some of the things that I did that I brought to the table. These are ideas that I did. No one else did it. And we're exceeding some of our other sister companies with some of the things that I brought to the table. And yet, you know, I'm trying to, you know, voice up and say, hey, I deserve a little bit more money. And really, it just got shot down, you know. And because of some goals that were out of our control and we have no power to achieve, you know, sales goals were, our department are the sales people, so we're not selling the product. We are, you know, sales are totally in the responsibility of the sales people. Well, no, I can't see myself going asking for more money for you when you missed this goal, you know. And that was a goal that we knew that we agreed to. I should say that it was given to us, but again, we don't have the power. Or we're not the sales people, you know. So it was almost as if, you know, I walked away from that saying, you know what, that's it. I'm done with trying to, I don't want to have to go to a white person again and try to ask for more money, you know, and for them to give you, you know, checks on everything that you did right and then find, oh, well, here's something, some other reason why we just don't, you know, I don't want to have to go and ask for more for you, you know. When you go back to answering your question, you know, what would prohibit you from potentially, you know, practicing some anti-racist logic? You know, when it's your manager, then that's probably one of the times when, you know, you kind of think twice about what you should do and what you should say when you suspect there's racist behaviors. So that's just my take. I'm a little leery, but then at the same time, I don't want to sit back. I'm not going to sit back and just let people say and do anything they want. But
you do kind of think twice when it's your manager who's the one. So, and some other things, but I'll let the mothers chime in. Thanks so much.
Thank you for sharing. Appreciate the feedback. And certainly, I would hope the person who is responsible for your raise being approved or potential promotion or whatever it is, vacation days, anything. I would certainly want to make sure that I think before speaking or writing, communicating with that individual. I guess with some of the situations that you outlined, like being in this person's office and you all are having some sort of discourse, and then another random person, presumably white, just walks into the room and he just totally drops your conversation and they just, you know, strike up a nice long chit chat while you're just hanging out. Whereas normally it would be, you know, well, let me talk to you later. I'm, you know, still talking with, you know, whatever, Sam here, whatever, I'll talk to you later. They would not do that and just hold a long conversation with someone else while you have a person waiting. Even if the person that we were talking about was not your, like, boss, even if it was someone who was just an equal level coworker, or maybe even a subordinate, let's say it was the janitor even, you know, someone that you can insult with impunity, if it's a suspected racist, I still don't know that, you know, if they did that sort of thing, that I would interrupt them immediately and call them names or, you know, and so you're going to finish talking to me right now. I might have the exact same response either way to just note that, you know, this person is practicing racism, white supremacy. I guess maybe if, you know, this was wasting my time, you could excuse yourself. If it was not the person who signs your checks, Maris, you might have to stay there if it's your boss. But sometimes I don't know that the response would be that different, at least in my view. A lot of times, particularly for the types of things that you were talking about, a lot of times in those instances, you might not need to say anything at all. You just note that an act of white supremacy just happened. I think this person was just practicing racism against me. You can document that or what have you, note that it occurred, and, you know, you might not need to say anything at all at that moment. I think that's important as well. But certainly with your boss, I would definitely think we would want to practice counter racism there. And for me, that doesn't mean that you're, you know, challenging and saying a whole lot. It just means thinking and spending some time doing some quality thinking about what you want to say, what you want to do to achieve the best result. And even that interrupting, because that might be something to be brought up as well in terms of time and energy. Like, you know, is if that's something that you think wants to be addressed, then you think about the best way of going about addressing that. And same thing, you just go down the line with the raise. You think about the best way of addressing it to get the best result. That's the way that I think about counter-racist codification in the workplace. Other folks, if you have comments on what we've heard thus far, if you have your own suggestions, the number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have comments, questions. Again, if we have folks who have input on what stops us from practicing counter racism in the workplace, what stops us from following through in the workplace, that would be appreciated as well. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you say the topic is what keeps, sometimes what keeps you from practicing counter-racism in the workplace. I have one instance, well, actually two. I used to work at a landfill, and after a period of time, you know, many of the, just one particular coworker began to practice racism, white supremacy. So I began to document things in video and audio form. And such things as, you know, little slick comments, you know, no direct epithets, but little slick comments and denial of access to certain equipment or promotion or learning capabilities, and keeping me from actually doing my job to the best standards that I could. So I had all this stuff documented in a video and audio fashion. And once I'd gotten to the point of at the job where I felt my life was in danger and I had to quit, I went ahead and took my evidence to the EEOC. Now, from the outstart at the EEOC, you know, the lawyer I had who was going to take the case to the EEOC told me that the EEOC nullifies 95% of the discrimination cases that is brought before it. And I thought that was a pretty high number. And I was like, wow, you know, okay, well, you know, I got audio and video evidence, you know, maybe that I was treated indifferently or treated unfairly. And so they drew up the case and everything, went through the EEOC and everything. And when it came down to the day for my interview, you know, the interviewer started asking me questions, you know, and I was answering them to the best of my abilities, you know. And then she asked me, do you have any evidence? You know, I said, yes, you know, I have video and audio evidence. You know, okay, we can point out this right here, and this proved that, you know, what they said in their report is false. You know, she was like, well, the interviewer from the EEOC was like, well, no, we can't take your evidence because we can't get it verified by the FBI or anything like that. So we can't get voice audio verified. We can't get, you know, visualizations verified legally. So we cannot use your evidence. And I was like, wow, you know, because initially I had asked the lawyer before I even presented the case, you know, is video and audio evidence, you know, substantiated in, you know, the reviews and stuff like that. And the lawyer told me yes. So from there, at that moment, you know, I was like, wow, for real? Okay, so I went ahead, you know, and tried my best to relate my, you know, situation and, you know, the evidence that I had. And, you know, of course, you know, being as I was in a primarily white supremacist environment, being the only black person there, you know, you didn't have no support. You know, you got to have like four or five people who will collaborate your, you know, story in order for the EEOC to really consider it. So I was relating what was going on with me and as best as I could. And then it got to a point to where the interviewer for the EEOC made a statement as if, you know, to my lawyer to tell your client to calm down, you know. And I was, me and the lawyer was kind of shocked, you know. I was like, really? And, you know, the lawyer said, you know, no, by no means is he in any way angry. He said, in fact, he's sitting here smiling while he's telling you the story. You know, he's just assertive, you know, and telling his points. And, you know, the interviewer was like, you know, well, I'm sensing anger. You know, this is the interviewer with the EEOC. And I turned and spoke to her, you know. I said to her, I know you want me to talk like this, but I can't because that's not me. You know, I took a, you know, kind of a higher pitched tone, softer voice with her. And then I went to my regular voice and then told her, no, that's not me. I'm not going to talk to you like I'm soft. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going to lower my voice to make you feel good. And so after that, the interview ended and whatever have you. And a couple of weeks later, they came back and said that I didn't have no case. So I move on to my next job. And at this time, you know, I was like, well, you know, I had become really indifferent about white supremacy and, in fact, white people. You know, I had come to expect those kind of behaviors from them. So when I got on this job, you know, the first thing, like most people, most black people experience, you know, they start off with that pet name bull crap. You tell them your name, you know, my name is, for instance, me, my name is Stuart, you know, and then 2 days later, you know, they're all calling me Stewie, you know, and I'm like, okay. So when it started with that, you know, they would say Stewie, and I turned my head and looked the other way, you know, like, are you really talking to me? I would visually do that because after that last incident, you know, I realized that it causes a lot of stress on you to document everything. Not that you shouldn't, you should document everything, but it causes more stress on you when you do your diligence to document everything. And then when you have to take that case to the EEOC and you still get your feelings crushed, that really hurts. So in turn, I figured that you have to kind of go on the offensive when dealing with white supremacy. You know, when they come with those little things that they poke you with, you know, don't be afraid to go ahead and poke them back. You know, you know, just be indifferent to who they are, you know. And another
hang on one second because we heard or I heard a metaphor. You said when they poke you, poke them back. That is a metaphor,
right,
even though this isn't a compensatory call-in, but very important because workplace racism absolutely has to be about detail. So what do you mean exactly in terms
of... Well, what I mean is like when people say that, you know, they come to them and they say little racist remarks, you know, when you and you feel it, you know, you feel the racism in it, even though it's not a direct epithet that they use, but you can feel the racism in the intent behind the questions they come at you with or the statements they come at you with. You know, when I say poke them back, you know, make mockery of them. Make a mockery of them, you know, in a sense. When they, not in the sense that you tell them, oh, that's racist, but once you get skilled in understanding white supremacy, you'll be able to make responses back to them to where it would actually frustrate them. Because in that moment that they make those little comments, they're trying to make you into the N-word that they think you are or that they want you to be. So you can never give them that. You can never, you know, show frustration, show anger, you know, show contempt.
Let me ask a question just based on what I heard there. So is your goal in the workplace when a race soldier, when they're practicing racism against you, is the goal to frustrate them? Is that what the goal is?
Yeah, that's that. Well, when they come with those little tactics, yes, that's what I in turn do. That way I don't feel that frustration. That way, you know, it doesn't come back on me in any kind of way in my feelings, in my attitudes, you know. You know, of course you'd be cordial, you know, you'd be nice, you know, whatever have you, as far as doing the job or whatever have you. But when they do those little racialized instances, don't be afraid to poke them back. Make them angry. And then they don't know how to necessarily deal with that. They really don't. You know what I mean? It really doesn't. You know, one thing I really realize is that, you know, as a black person, if you are in a skilled trade or if you're in an environment where you're all by yourself, you're going to suffer that indignation from white supremacy. The one thing you can't do is, you know, inculcate it. You know, you can't let it really affect you to that extent. So you don't have to go out and get vocal. You don't have to, you know, fight on them or nothing like that. But learn to find out the cynicism, the mockery. And they understand that very well. They understand that very well. And in turn, they'll turn around and probably leave you alone, not talk to you, or go ahead and start crafting new ways to get you out of there. But either way, you know, either way it goes, you're not suffering from it. You're not suffering any indignation from it. That's what I found. You know, that's about the only tactic you can do. Is in a sense fight back in the sense, in a nice way.
Hmm. Okay. Context of White Supremacy, weekly broadcast, workplace racism, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. We'll say quickly before I check the other person who dialed in that we hadn't heard from, my approach with regards to counter-racism in the workplace and really any environment, my approach generally is not aimed at producing frustration for racists, even though that might be a byproduct, but generally that is not my focus. The focus is solving problems without creating new problems, especially that's the main focus in the workplace. Other folks who dialed in that we've not heard from at all, if you have your own situation that you would like to share, if you have suggestions, comments on what we've heard thus far, proceed.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, good evening, everybody. Thanks for taking my call, Gus. So on the topic of not practicing codification, I actually am in a current situation which I believe has been caused by that. I called in last week. I'm being racially showcased as a software developer at a small company in Wisconsin. But when I first got there, my previous boss, I've had two bosses at this job, and my previous boss started to sexually harass me when I was about maybe 9 months in at the job. And because I thought mistakenly that the system would work for me, you know, I went to HR. And while his behavior subsided, it didn't really stop per se. He just found more covert ways to do it. And I've noticed that there are other white males in my job now who have insinuated things or have made comments regarding inappropriate behavior between me and this person. Very recently, I was downstairs speaking with some of the architects, and the vice president in charge of architecture was walking behind me, and I turned around, and his hand was positioned to where if he continued to walk, he would have actually have touched me inappropriately, like he would have grabbed my butt or something like that. And I turned around and he moved his hand. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of feel like my behavior regarding the sexual harassment before is sort of leading to this situation now and may actually be the cause of some of this racial showcasing. So that was my commentary on that. I'm really bad at articulating myself. I do it better in written form, but maybe if you need some clarification, let me know.
No, ma'am. I thought you did a great job explaining what happened in the situation, and I don't think it's the situation is racist man practicing white supremacy and sexually terrorizing you. That's, you know, what's responsible for what's taking place. I think we've pointed out on the program over a number of years a huge pattern, especially with any form of sexual abuse on the job or elsewhere, but especially on the job. When we're finishing up Wisdom of Psychopaths tomorrow, and they have talked about that predator radar where, oh, I can abuse and mistreat this person and they're not going to do anything about it. They're not going to say anything. I'll just continue to, you know, abuse and terrorize them. We've, I think, noted over on the job that racists in particular, when they are into any form of sexual abuse, when it's not stopped, when you don't immediately make it clear that that is not acceptable at all, it just, they tend to be emboldened to do more and more and more and more. And I think we talked about before, Jerry Sandusky logic. It's been my experience, and I think others have said the same thing. Whites, they tend to know, oh yeah, they knew Jerry Sandusky was doing these, you know, explicit things. That was not a hidden secret up in Pennsylvania. They tend to know. Same thing with Jerry Savile across the pond over next to where Stacy is. They know how other whites function, even the sexual predators. So it's not a surprise. You said like it seemed that this had kind of been whispered or gossiped about, some sort of illicit activity happening with you all, and then maybe others getting involved. That tends to be the way racists operate on the job. And that's, you know, why I've said pretty consistently with that, you really want to make sure that you make it explicit the very first time. Absolutely not. You can practice, you know, what you want to say, but to stop that immediately, because it tends to just get worse and worse and worse. And that's one I would take real, real serious, man, because I mean, that sounds horrendous, like a nightmare to just have random strangers coming up, or these are so-called colleagues walking up behind you and about to grope you or something. Like, oh my God, like I would take that extremely seriously. And I think of that as you're going to a very dangerous environment, and just self-protection would be priority one, and getting that stopped immediately, because that sounds like that could just get way, way worse.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, it's embarrassing to talk about, you know, but it's really helpful to hear what you said. I mean, there was maybe about a year after it started, and I was working with another manager on another project, and he was asking me why I wasn't getting work done, and I said, well, I'm been tasked with all these other tasks. And he said, oh, well, you know, I wonder why he keeps on giving you all the work when he has so many other people on the team, you know. And then later on, like a couple of days later, he's in a meeting with me, and all of a sudden he starts talking about how he wants to give me all this work and everything. And the implication, from the way I saw it and the way he was speaking, like, the implication was, well, you know, you probably gave him sexual favors to get all that work, and so you can give me those sexual favors, too. I mean, you know, I'm sort of paraphrasing what happened, but that was the implication in the meeting. And it just seems like that is, you know, that's part of the way these people think about me. And I remember reading, I know you guys read this on the show, The Half Has Never Been Told. And he was talking about how, you know, enslaved women were, you know, valued for their sexual attractiveness or whatever. And I just don't think that ideology has changed. I just don't think that ideology has changed from slavery until now. I think they think exactly the same way about us that they thought about us 300, 400 years ago, you know. And that's just my perception of it. I could be wrong, but yeah. I'll meet my line.
Indeed, that is, I'm sorry you have had to endure that. That sounds just loathsome to have to work in that sort of environment where that's, you know, how people think about you. And that just becomes widespread, like the reputation, if you will, that you have around the office. I mean, that is repugnant all the way. But again, just in my view, just further underscores this is a very dangerous environment. I would take that extremely serious if this is seeming plantational in that way at all. Like, oh yeah, we should all have the same, you know, privileges to, you know, do what we want. Like, man, that is extraordinarily dangerous. I would, you know, think in just those terms and be thinking in a counter-racist manner, you know, what steps do I need to take to stop this, like, immediately? Because, I mean, wow, that is, I mean, that is beyond toxic. Beyond, I mean, I don't have the words to overstate. Just that is extraordinarily dangerous, in my view. Did we have any other suggestions on what we've heard, the situation specifically, or other folks have a commentary they wanted to make sure they get in?
May I be heard? May I say a suggestion, or I can wait?
Yes, ma'am. Let's hear your suggestion.
Well, first, to the female caller, I truly understand where, how you feel, because I was, well, my previous job, I was going through the same thing, except it was with a white woman. So, definitely, and I also let it go on for too long, but I would, what I used to do was just trying to avoid the person. And I know that might not be plausible for you, but if there's any way just to make sure that you're not, you know, alone, or try to reduce the time that you have to be alone with that person. Also make sure, and I know, like, it increased my anxiety, but also whenever I would see the person, just make sure I knew where an exit was. It sounds kind of crazy, but then, you know, it at least kind of gave me somewhat comfort, so that way you don't have to keep being embarrassed like that. With my case, the person would actually touch me in front of other people, and I could see how they were uncomfortable with it, just how I was feeling on the inside. So I would just make that suggestion. Then also, like, when I would go home, I would just try to unwind, try to find something that relaxed me and to take my mind off of the abuse that I was feeling, or I was actually experiencing. So I just wanted to add that. I definitely wish you the best, and I hope that, you know, you try to remain safe as possible. Thank you.
Review your policy and procedure manual as well. I'm a big advocate of using those words in that book
actually work that time.
To protect you. You can check, because most policy and procedure manuals will have something about sexual harassment or any form of sexual inappropriate behavior or making someone feel uncomfortable. in that manner. So I would check the policy and highlight particular sections. I think we talked about that before as well. That can be helpful in different ways that can be presented. Even asking in meetings, that's one that I'm also a big advocate of, where you don't have to call anybody out specifically, but just any type of behavior in that manner. And just give an example, is this sort of thing acceptable to say in the workplace? And just ask in a meeting and get the response, no, it's not. Oh, okay. Just making sure I wanted to clarify that just that alone can send a signal that this is not acceptable, that, you know, total change. I am not, you know, going to be acceptable to the best of my ability. I'm not going to allow people to continue to talk to me in this sort of manner in the workplace. I think that can be very important. And you're not accusing anybody. You're not going to get, you know, anyone in trouble, as they say. You're not going to snitch on anybody. But it, in my view, it sends a very clear message. And in fact, you get the same effect, I think, just asking questions about what is sexually inappropriate conduct in the workplace. If they have any sort of meeting about that thing, sexual harassment training, that sort of thing, you asking questions, all of that sends a signal. I'm serious about this, and this behavior is not going to be tolerated. Other folks have suggestions, this situation specifically, or if you have your own situation you wanted to address, any other folks that we missed who had a hand up?
Gus, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I wanted to, address what the guy said a few callers ago about the emails. And, those emails are strong evidence. You know, those could be admissible in court. And that's also to the guy who talked about the EOC. Yeah, you make sure you have. Now, the videotapes, you know, those can be altered, like they said, but those emails are what you need. Now, that's really strong evidence, or you need witnesses. That's the strongest evidence I could think they could use. But what the guy was saying earlier about who was being screamed and yelled at, and he used the emails. Now, I did that too, because, I mean, you want to save all your emails. My email file goes back 3 years. But I do want to caution you, when you sent them copies of those emails, when you sent those white folks the copies of your emails, you really have to watch that now. Because what could happen, and this happened to me, is that what you need to do is make copies of important emails, because there was one time when I was had a case against my job and they knew I was using emails like the guy was. I went back there one day and all those emails were erased. They were eradicated. My emails went back 5 years. I went back there. I had no emails. So my advice to you is, if you get important emails like that, is to make your own copy and keep it in a notebook where you'll have it. And I guess he was saying that the guy from the white folks from Britain were coming and cursing at people. See, that's another way that they practice racism, white supremacy, because that company would never allow people of color from North Africa or Nigeria or any other company to come and yell and curse at people if they were non-black. Black non-white coming in doing that, they would have been gone in the blink of an eye. That company said, oh, we're not going to put up with that. You're out of here, no matter what country you're from, if you're a black person. And also, too, what the guy was saying about the EEOC is, I don't trust any of those EEOC, the federal government or the State Department of Human Rights. Even if you do win, if they rule in your favor, all they're going to give you is a letter of right to sue. And then you still got to hire your own attorneys, you know, and go to court. And I think, too, in my experience with them, with the EEOC and the State Department of Human Rights, you got to remember that they're still controlled by white folks. My investigator, you know, when I became a lot less confused, was white, and they practice racism too, but by what they were saying to me, because a lot of stuff they were saying to me just didn't sound right. It sounded like they were practicing racism. And like I said, you want to get your own attorney. And the only people that I've seen that I've known that won the EOC were white people, white guys, when they were winning age discrimination. I have never seen a black person win an millions of dollars in the EOC case or any of these State Department of Human Rights cases. And I asked one of the investigators, you know, at the Illinois Department of Human Rights, I said, well, let me ask you a question. With the investigator I had, I said, when these cases go to court on a state level, and you've been with them for 15 years, have you ever seen a black person go to court with the Department of Human Rights, which is a branch of the EOC? Have you ever seen any black person win millions and millions of dollars? He said, never. He said, that's never happened. Now, I can believe. And now with the sexual harassment thing is that the only people that I've ever seen on TV
with
big money were white women. Okay, because I'm just about done, you know. And, you know, that's the only time I've ever seen a white person or white women on TV win. And I guess black women are being sexually harassed too, and they don't get the support that white women get. You know, when a black woman, like the lady said, she was touched, and if she went and tried to get some witnesses.
Thank you, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Well, I just wanted to make sure we had time because I think there are some other folks who we haven't heard from as well.
Okay.
Had a chance to get in as well, but. Thank you kindly for the commentary. Appreciate that. And thank you for reminding me as well about the EEOC remarks that were made earlier and your observations. I agree. I cannot think there are very, very few black people that have successfully filed some sort of EEOC claim and got some sort of financial compensation. The numbers are very low. Mr. Fuller has talked about that. That's why I think he and others advocate not charging folks on the job with practicing racism, because that generally is going to be very, very difficult to prove in the workplace. I think Mr. Fuller talks about that in explicit detail about you do not want to make that sort of charge in the workplace. I'm not surprised at all with some sort of EEOC investigation or even going with audio or video when they say, no, that's that evidence is not going to be accepted, and that they generally do not find that any racism was practiced, or discrimination, that might be the word that they use, was practiced. That generally is how things are set up to operate. Can you not interrupt, sir? Thank you kindly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Appreciate that. That's generally how that is set up to function. They already have a code about how that is going to work to support the system of white supremacy. Other folks who dialed in, if we have not heard from you at all, anybody that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, proceed. Did we nab everybody? Anybody that we missed completely with a hand up? Retired firefighter? Any other folks that we missed completely?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I didn't know that you had tuned me in. What was the question
just
for today?
Obstacles that things that stop people from applying counter-racism on the job, where we kind of know what to do, or at least have an idea about what we should not be doing, should be doing, should be saying, should not be saying, but we, for whatever reason, don't follow through with it on the job. And then if we can remember any specific times where that happened specifically, where this happened, I know the counter-racist thing to do, I did not do it, and this is what happened when that played out.
I would say perhaps fear. And if you would ask Well, fear of what? Well, being afraid of that you, the fear of not really formulating your words together so that you'd be effective, and the fear of being consistent in your codification. It is a fact, and some of us, a lot of us, probably would admit it, that white people make us nervous. and I would say that is logical, because if that's not true, then I don't think there would be a system of racism and white supremacy. In other words, it embellishes that they have their victims to be afraid to, you know, even act when they know, well, I wouldn't say know, but have a good idea that they have a process or some sort of procedure. But I would say to any victim to, you know, try to overcome your fear and don't be so much worried about making mistakes along the way, because even if you do make a mistake, you're probably going to be on a job as long as I did. You're probably going to have a lot more opportunities to get a little bit better in your procedure of your codified procedure. You probably get a little bit better as time goes by, you know, because you're going to constantly get into some kind of trouble or problem with a white person or white people in general on the job. That's my thoughts on that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Fear is a big obstacle. Absolutely. And certainly, I've used that same logic before. You will get many opportunities on the job if you feel bad or like, oh, man, I didn't speak up today. You know, he said such and such. And, you know, I knew I should have said something or should have did this. And I didn't do it. Hey, guarantee you, Friday comes, you will get an opportunity to try your counter-racism code out again. If not Friday, Monday, Tuesday, just keep getting up and going to work and you'll get plenty of opportunities to try out your counter-racism code. So certainly no need to feel bad about that at all. Other folks, anybody else that we missed completely, if you have any suggestions on anything that we've heard from the listeners who have participated, if you have comments on what you've heard from them, if you have your own situation, if you have figured out some codification that works well, that would be great. And certainly if we have any folks who would like to share, if you can think back and reflect times where you specifically did not practice counter-racism on the job. You knew this is the thing that I should do, but you didn't do it for whatever reason. And then this was the result. That would be grand commentary on why we do not follow through and apply counter-racism in the workplace. I think very important. Any other folks?
Can I be heard?
Can I be heard? Oh, sorry. Let the lady go first.
Much obliged. Greetings, everybody. Sorry for chiming in so late, but I wasn't in a quiet place where I could speak, but I am now. I agree completely with Mr. Firefighter. I think also, like, fear was one of the things that hindered me for a while, and it still does sometimes. Another one, I think, like recently, I was in the pharmacy and I engaged the pharmacist in a conversation about like politics, and then it spilled over into race and religion. And I knew that I was in a very sticky territory. I did get really good information because he considers himself Egyptian, but also white. And then that's when I realized, like, this is a white person, which then confirmed that only white people know. Like white people, I
don't know who's white and who's not white, like not really, you know? So I learned something, but ever since then, there's been a dynamic shift, and I knew that was the incorrect thing to do. I shared that situation here. I knew that was the incorrect thing to do, but I still did it anyway. And I think in part, like, I'll be honest too, maybe there's some ego involved that sometimes, like, I've chosen the position that I choose to play, like the face, the mask that I choose to wear when I'm at work, which is quiet, maybe even like odd or weird, and definitely not as intelligent as I actually am. So sometimes that gets a little frustrating because I am constantly like belittled. And so then I show my true self for a second, but then it gets really sticky because then after that, then people kind of can't, they struggle looking to seeing the mask. They kind of see behind the mask after that. So I will confess, maybe a little ego sometimes prevents me from adhering to the code and like, you know, doing that. One suggestion that's been working, one thing that has been working for me that I wanted to comment on or at least share with other people is being like 100% involved, at least like 90, like there's 10% of my mind that's always going to be drifting, doing like thinking about something else, but really, really being involved in what I'm doing when I'm at work, whatever it is I'm doing. So I'm in the pharmacy, so it could even be like changing the trash, like be involved in changing the trash. I know that seems perhaps like trite or very small, but I've noticed that it makes a very big difference on how like the people around me respond to my presence in the pharmacy and how they view my work ethic, which I feel I have observed abates some of the like tension. And it allows me to just stay really busy, you know, so I can scan prescriptions, like whatever I'm doing, I'm involved in it. So it makes me look like a really hard worker and stuff like that. And it also makes me find like a little bit more enjoyment. This might have to do something with the mindfulness kind of thing. Like if you're 100% engaged in whatever it is that you're doing, you can be a little bit more fulfilled in your life instead of being like a robot. But anyway, that's just one thing. Another thing that I wanted to mention, I think it's very helpful. Like, I don't know what everybody's intention is, but mine is to solve the problem. And I just go to work to make a couple pennies to be able to do that. I don't define myself by my job. And I've said that before. I think that's very important. But also, like, I have started working with youth and, like, doing any other time that I've done something like that, I've had something else that actually gives me something to hold on to. And that helps me maintain my sanity when I'm in a very stressful work environment, very stressful racist work environment, be it school and or the pharmacy. That way I know like what I'm really here to do, I do. And this is just what I kind of do so I can do what I'm really here to do. And it's like a psychological thing that I found has been fortifying and helping me out. And then the last little vignette I wanted to share back to the fear thing. So I spoke with some young people with an organization that I'm volunteering with. And Gus, are you giving me my cue? Is that you?
Racist feedback, I think.
Okay, I'll make it quick. And I went in there. I was hoping there were no white kids, but there were. But whatever, I still said what I was going to say. I had practiced that. And I was intended on sharing the information that I wanted to, which was a clear definition on racism, white supremacy, what time it is, where we are, and what's happening with the young people, because I might never speak with them again. So I shared some videos from YouTube that are of Dr. Welsing and of Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., but they're the cartoons, just because I think that the imagery is impactful. And I was really nervous, actually, when I left, because I wasn't really sure how I was received. Like, there was a lot of, you know, pushback and whatnot from the young people. But we went there and we had a very thought-provoking, encouraging conversation. And encouraging only because I knew that it sunk in. I could feel the vibe drop, which isn't what I wanted, but that's, you know, like, you shouldn't feel good talking about racism, white supremacy. So anyway, long story short, I panicked. And I was so nervous. I was like, oh, my God, I hope no one recorded me. What if they recorded me? What if, like, everything gets sent to the school, that I'm over here saying this, everything I'm working for medical school will go down the drain. What if people find me on the internet? I shut down everything. Like, I really went into overdrive, I suppose, because I do want to protect myself. I'm not doing what I'm doing for nothing. And I'm too early in the game to really come out and be 100% me and feel like I can still have a life in the future. So I got really nervous. But then they invited me back to speak again. And then I felt good. And so back to the codification, I will be far more codified this time. I will still say what I need to say. But I think practice will allow me to be more effective when speaking to young people about racism, white supremacy, even if and when there are white people present, because I suspect that there will always be white people present and I can't just get them to leave. So, and then being prepared that whatever I do say, however I do say it, even if one of these young people record me and put me someplace, that if someone says, well, hey, Emmy, we saw that you said this at such and such a time, that I would be like how Mr. Fuller said and be able to say, yes, I did say that. Do we have a problem? And be able to be confident and secure in that so that I could still be codified, but still be impactful and not be codified and fearful. And so I'll let y'all know how things go. So thank you for listening.
Spectacular. Taking time out to speak to other victims of racism and especially younger victims of white supremacy. That is spectacular, getting the message out. Awesome job. And that too is a practice. You will get better. Keep doing it and being courageous in doing so, not being afraid. And I love it. Stand by your work. Absolutely. I said it on February 21st, 7 p.m. Said it 3-4 times. Absolutely. Any problem with what I said, that's the way that we should go about the business of counter-racism. Absolutely. Other folks that dialed in with a hand up, if we missed you completely, anybody that has not shared at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Have you heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everyone. This is HV. Greetings, Gus, and to the listeners and callers. I just wanted to quickly say thank you, Gus, for 9 years of just an incredible program. And this workplace racism is my absolute favorite. I've listened to every episode that I could find, which is over 80 shows. So at 3 hours apiece, you know, that's a lot. And the one thing that the reason why I love it so much is that in my view, or at least from my experience, it has really helped me to, it has really opened up my understanding of how white people work in a very, very profound way, because you hear all these hours of so many of us going through the very same things all the time. So when you see this amount of patterns that are similar from so many different people, from all these different shows, I mean, from all these different programs, it really helps you to see. And it helped me even recently to see how white people were practicing racism against me that I hadn't even realized. Now, that wasn't on the job, but just that as well. It even helped me other times where I didn't notice that racism was being practiced against me on the job. So just participation in this particular show and all of them, but to me, and especially in this one, is absolutely critical. And I just want to thank you so much, Gus, and thank you to the rest of the callers for all their participation over the years. And I'll mute my line. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate that, HV, hopefully. Worthy of folks' time and energy, and definitely appreciate massive gratitude to all the folks who have dialed in and participated in workplace racism, as it's been an individual program. And even back when we were doing workplace racism just as a component, the final component of the compensatory call-in, that's the way it was for some years, I believe, because I think it's critically important. I think that is one area of racism, white supremacy, that deserves substantial study. And I think you can observe a lot of patterns with regards to what it means to be white and how they function in relation to black people worldwide. Appreciation to Stacey as well. That's always appreciate her. And I think we've had other folks dial in from Ireland and other parts of the world who dialed in to participate in workplace racism. Worldwide problem. Anybody else that we missed who dialed in with a hand up? I know there was a male caller who yielded the floor to Emmy. Did you have commentary, sir?
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. So I had called earlier a rugby player from UNCG, or shall I say former rugby player from UNCG. I now have my notes, so I'm able to speak clearly. Okay, so I'll be really fast. One situation that I take note of, like, say, 2 weeks ago, there was only, like, a few non-white players on our team. Well, it's like three black people, counting me, okay? So there's always, like, new white people coming in all the time, either European or American. So another guy came in and happened to be an American. Not really super athletic. Not anything special. Decent, but not anything special. The other black guy on my team was responsible for scoring just about all the points last semester. He was amazing. He done really well. I'm more of a defensive-minded guy, so I was just like, let him do everything needs to be done for this team to win. Let him do it. And I had noticed, started taking notice, like, last semester that, like, when he would score, it was like, you know, it was a given. Not like he did anything amazing. It was just something that, like, he should have been doing anyway. You know, it wasn't really anything exciting. So this new guy shows up. He hasn't played any games. He's just been there. He's just been running drills, and he gets all this praise. And so we're running drills. I'm behind this green line, right? So, like, it's like three or four lines of, like, I don't know, eight people. So I'm behind this German guy, and the new guy is, like running or whatnot. He turns around, and he says, he's pretty fast, right? I said, yeah, he's all right. He's, you know, he's decent. I said, I don't think he's better than the black guy. Black guy's name is David. I think David's the one we should all be thinking, right? So the German guy says, actually, I think he's faster than David. He's very agile. He's very special. I looked at him, which I wanted to say more, because David wasn't around to speak for himself. And of course, him being the only few black players on the team, I want to stand up for him. But all I say is I disagree. Which I shouldn't even say that. I shouldn't have been silent. I was completely off cold. So the white guy, like, looked at me, gave me a side eye, and, like, started laughing. And that's just, like, a few of the things. I'm not going to, like, waste any more time, but I appreciate you for, like, letting me get that out. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. I think just kind of a theme, you know, just talking about this evening. I think any sort of, this sounds similar to a workplace type environment. I would be mindful about getting into any sort of exchanges with suspected racists. I've seen where a lot of times, what is the purpose of this exchange? That's what I would be thinking about before it even gets started. What's, you know, the point? What is the goal that I'm trying to reach? And I think you said yourself, you felt like maybe you weren't quite on code, which happens to a lot of us. I think all of us are still learning and trying to adapt and get better at applying codification, which is something we've been talking about all evening long. Any other folks have commentary or suggestions, anything they want to get in before we get ready to conclude last few minutes? We should be here tomorrow for the final session on the Wisdom of Psychopaths, Kevin Dutton, all done, and then compensatory call in this coming Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Any other comments folks wanted to get in this evening?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll make this quick. Another thing, besides just checking the policies and procedures of your employer, one thing that I had to do recently, since I've been looking for different jobs, since I got one actually, was checking like the state law, because apparently in Nevada, if you employers have the option of either, like when I was in Ohio, employers, if you didn't use all your vacation time, they would pay you out at the end of the year, or they would let you carry it over to the next year. In Nevada, employers can opt to this rule where if you don't use your vacation time, you just lose it. So they don't have to pay you. They just deplete it at the end of the year if you don't use it. So I just thought that was an interesting piece of information. Maybe other people might want to just double check your state laws as well. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
That is sizable. That is definitely something to check out. Policy and procedure. Just give a glance, read it over. Very important information. Any updates, that sort of thing? Very important information. Anybody else have suggestions, comments they wanted to make sure they got in?
Hey, I wanted to say one more thing, Gus. So I noticed a trend. And a couple of callers the last few weeks talked about black women being passed over for promotions and replaced with black men. And what I'm noticing is this new feminist movement and this Me Too movement, which started as a hashtag by a black woman who was pointing out black-on-black domestic violence. This Me Too movement, it's not very inclusive of black women. They're using them as the hashtag, but this is a very anti-black woman movement. And that's what I see going forward. It seems like I see a lot of them, this in particular group of feminists, pushing this white woman with black male agenda. And that's why I think you see LeVar Ball and a lot of people like that getting a lot of attention right now. But I think that in the workplace, that a lot of black women are going to be pushed out. I think a lot of white women are going to try to force their way up in those black women. Because white men in the workplace, I've noticed this, the white men in charge always have a very good relationship with particular black women. Because they've always had, they run their businesses. It's always been like that since slavery. The black woman would you know, be the one that interacted with that white man and let him know what was going on. So that I've noticed that, and I've noticed that white women I think that they're going to push those black women out. A lot of those black women that are in the workplace that are doing very well and came up from the last feminist movement are going to be moved out and replaced with white women. That's what I think is going to happen. And if they're not replaced with white women, they're going to be replaced with black men to compensate for that color thing. I'll be my line. Thank you.
Interesting. Interesting. That'll be something to observe moving forward. While I definitely would look for white women to ride this to continue, I think they've already been doing a lot of inserting and power grabbing on the plantation. I think they'll just be using this to continue to do more of that. And seeing how this is used to, move further, abuse, mistreat black females in the process, that'll be something to monitor as this proceeds. Anybody else have a quick comment they wanted to get in before we get ready to conclude? Suggestion or comment they wanted to make sure they shared?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes, I would also include, I too, I'm very suspicious about that effort. Although there have been some non-white black females specifically, that has basically utilized that concept of Me Too I'm still suspicious because white females are involved, and I've never seen anything constructive come out of that type of union, if you will. Just one more thing also, and this has something to do with the school shooting down here in South Florida. It was reported, well, I actually saw it, where the chief of Broward Sheriff's Office actually suspended. There was one enforcement official that was at that high school at the time of the shooter being on campus. And I'm just in hoping that that person, the reason why I brought it up, because I'm just in hoping that that person was not a non-white person, especially a non-white black person, because basically the police chief stated that he did not engage the shooter and literally he said, and kill him, which is something I haven't heard in a long time. I've seen it on some of those old news reels where a police officer would state that on camera. But he said that verbatim. And I'm just hoping that wasn't a non-white black person that was in that situation, because, and then again, I mean, that is, for instance, the equipment that was this white person used is a gun, I mean, a pistol is inferior to it. But and from the mere fact where, you know, that person, if it was a black person, that would have been a person that life would have been in serious jeopardy. That's all I had to say. Hopefully it's not. I didn't see a picture of him yet. So that's why I was just wondering. That's all.
More to come. We'll have to pay attention to that.
Hey.
White shooters.
Oh, I don't know if I said it, but I don't know if I said it, but he suspended this person. And in reaction to his suspended without pay, he retired. His name was Scott Peterson. If anybody want to look it up and find out if that was a white person or a non-white person, his name is Scott Peterson. Just haven't gotten to it yet. So.
We will investigate. That is our 3 hours. We will call it a broadcast. We should be here tomorrow. Wisdom of Psychopaths, all done. Final session. We will be wrapping up chapter 7 and the end of the book. Final thoughts and then moving on. New book, Saturday, compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, guest suggestions, comments, ideas, gripes, email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Thanks to all the folks who dialed in this evening to participate, wrote in. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy. I hope it was. I hope you heard some suggestions that are somewhat worthwhile that perhaps you can think about, perhaps apply if you deem that they would help solve problems without creating any new problems. That generally is the standard I try to use with regards to countering racism. Thanks again. I hope everyone remains safe, remain codified. Certainly, I would recommend sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I think racists have done a lot to exploit us being under the influence where we cannot think correctly and make great decisions, particularly if we are in a motor vehicle, driver, passenger, even as pedestrian. I think a lot of times they have caused tremendous problems for us. I think that's one thing that we can do that would help us preserve our brain computer, help us go in the direction of creating concepts, ideas that will help us permanently solve the problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. If you're going to be in a vehicle, buckle up. That also would help. Let's do everything that we possibly can to minimize contact
with race soldiers. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Help us remain focused, recognizing our cosmic duty on a planet dominated by racism, white supremacy, is to produce justice as quickly as possible. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Thanks all for tuning in. Context of White Supremacy, signing out.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.